Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Thursday hearing. We'll call this meeting to order and begin with a roll call, please.
Commissioner Bochco.
Here.
Commissioner Dumlau. Commissioner Eckerly.
Here.
Commissioner Escalante.
Here.
Commissioner Hart.
Present.
Commissioner Jackson?
Here.
Commissioner Kelly?
Here.
Commissioner Lopez?
Present.
Commissioner Loewenberg?
Here.
Commissioner Nothoff?
Here.
Commissioner Preciado?
Here.
Commissioner Turnbull Sanders?
Here.
Commissioner Williams?
Here.
Commissioner Wilson?
Present.
And Chair Harmon?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. We'll move to virtual meeting procedures, please.
All right. Good morning. This Coastal Commission meeting is occurring both in person and through Zoom. This meeting is also being webcast and can be viewed online at cal-span.org. If you have access to the internet and wish to watch or listen to the meeting only and not speak on an item, we recommend you use the CalSpan website. Those who wish to address the commission today can do so in person, through the Zoom platform, or by phone. The speaker request forms may be found on the commission's webpage. Paper forms and a scannable QR code for paperless submittal are available on the commission staff table just outside the meeting room. For those on Zoom, we have posted virtual hearing procedures on the commission's agenda webpage, which is a guide on providing comments via Zoom or by phone. Members of the public speaking during general public comment may be given up to 2 minutes to speak at the discretion of the chair. Requests to speak during the general public comment period will not be accepted after 9 a.m. on each day of the meeting. In order to provide the opportunity for the broadest range of public participation, you may speak on a specific topic one time only each month. Those speaking on an agenda item that is not general public comment are typically allowed 2 to 3 minutes to speak at the discretion of the chair. We will accept a request to speak on a regular agenda item up until the chair opens the hearing on that particular item. If you have internet access, please go to the commission's webpage and click on the link to fill out a speaker request. If you do not have internet access or prefer to testify by phone, please call the commission staff at 562-477-9089. Again, that number is 562-477-9089. Staff will provide you with a telephone call-in number and instructions for how to participate and provide testimony by phone. We will manage speakers coming in and out of the meeting through a meeting organizer. When it is your time to address the commission, the organizer will invite you to turn on your video and microphone or provide instructions on how to unmute the phone. Madam Chair, that concludes the virtual hearing procedures.
Thank you, Chris. Now I will move to Ms. Warren for a report out from yesterday's closed session.
Thank you, Chair Hart. When the commission met in closed session, it received litigation information advice and took action on Rio Del Mar Beach Island Homeowners Association et al. Versus California Coastal Commission. It also received litigation information and advice regarding Sable Offshore Corp. versus California Coastal Commission. That concludes my report.
Thank you. And now we'll move to agenda changes. Mr. Schwing.
Thank you, and good morning to the commission and to everybody who is joining us today. We did publish a list on Monday of the agenda changes, and that remains accurate, but let me walk through those now. Starting with item 9A, that's CDP application 62364, the State Park Story Pines Reserve Comfort Station, that's moved to consent. Item 9B, CDP application 624503, Olnick, that's postponed. Item 10A, CDP amendment application 616340A3, the Moss application from Carlsbad, that's moved to consent. Item 12A, City of Newport Beach's LCP amendment 2339-3 on accessory encroachments, that's moved to consent. Item 14A, CDP application 52520. This is Orange County Public Works Ocean Outlet Maintenance. That is moved to consent. Item 18A, that's LCP amendment 3 SCO 25211. This is Santa Cruz County's well and water system update amendment. That's moved to consent. Item 18B, another Santa Cruz LCP amendment. That's 2522-1 Part B, the county's cannabis update and produce stand changes. That's moved to consent. Item 18C, Santa Cruz application STC 2524, the homeless garden project site certification. That's moved to consent. Item 18D, that's San Luis Obispo County's cannabis update LCP amendment 2526-1. That's moved to consent. Item 19A, CDP application 323757. This is the Caltrans Big Creek retaining wall in Big Sur. That's postponed. And item 19B, CDP application 325215, the Bayside Landing mixed-use project in Morro Bay, that is also postponed. And that concludes today's agenda changes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schwing. And now we will move to general public comment.
Okay.
2 minutes.
For members of the public, I'll be announcing the names of the upcoming speakers and invite you to speak when it is your turn. Each speaker will be allowed 2 minutes during general public comment at the discretion of the chair. In order to allow for live video testimony on Zoom, we will be bringing you in as panelists. As we bring you in, your Zoom will reload, and this may take a moment. To speed up this process, we will bring several people in at a time, but please remain muted and keep your video off until we ask you to speak. After your time is up, you'll be moved back to attendee mode. For members of the public present in the room, I'll call your names in the order that they appear in our sign-up list. When you hear your name, please line up behind the podium and announce yourself when you approach to speak. There is a raise your hand function that will help us find you in the attendee list. If you are using a phone for audio, you can raise your hand by dialing *9. If you are participating by Zoom, you should see a button on your Zoom screen. If you have signed up to speak for this item and are able to do so, please raise your hand now. When it is your time to speak, we will invite you to unmute and turn on your camera. You can unmute yourself on a phone by dialing *6. We do have a pretty hefty general public comment today. We have a total of 59 people signed up, including 40 in person. So we'll start with the in-person speakers. We have Kara Woodruff, Jacob McNevin, Chintan Desai, and then Carmen Rhodes. So go ahead, Kara. Mm-hmm. And then turn the mic on when you're up there. So. Turn the mic on, please. There you go.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Kara Woodruff. I'm the district director for Senator John Laird. He couldn't be here today, but this is part of his district, so welcome. We're really happy you're here. He's a big supporter and champion of your work, so thank you. And also thank you yesterday for the significant grant to the city of Pismo Beach to update their LCP. That's a huge, important issue for this community. Given the limited time, I just wanted to mention two issues that came up yesterday. The first is the Oceana Dunes SVRA. As you know, the Coastal Commission and state parks are going to have a lot of discussion about how to respond to the needs out there of the community in light of recent court rulings. And I just wanted to mention two things that I speak from personally. Number one, the community of Oceano is really hurting. They receive the biggest of the impacts, and I hope that you can really address the issues that they have been speaking about for years. Number two, in solving the Oceano problem, you don't want to create a new issue for another disadvantaged community in the city of Guadalupe. Putting in a southern entrance that would negatively impact and bring all those impacts down to the city of Guadalupe and also threaten the Osoflaco Lake Natural Area is not the right solution. That is a world-class biodiversity site and the most important birding area on the Central Coast, so please continue to protect it. The second issue is Jabal Canyon Power Plant. as you are in discussions with PG&E about the potential future of the operation of that plant under the Coastal Act and the Coastal Zone Management Act. Keep in mind that this will be your only opportunity to protect the 12,000 acres that surround the Diablo Canyon Power Plant. Those are known as the Diablo Canyon lands. It includes North Ranch, South Ranch, and Wild Cherry Canyon. This is an area that has been the subject of a public referendum. It's extremely important to this community. Use this opportunity to protect that land and ensure public access. This probably will be your only opportunity. And if you want more information about that area, please check out DiabloCanyonLands.org. Thanks again for coming. We're really glad to have you here.
Thank you. Again, Jacob McNevin, Chintan Desai, Carmen Rhodes, Ted Key.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Jacob McNevin. I'm a local resident, a scientist, a volunteer with the San Luis Obispo chapter of the Surfrider Foundation, serving as the chapter's climate and clean energy program coordinator. I'm also a little bit of a nervous public speaker. I'm here today to demonstrate Surfrider SLO's support for the responsible and timely implementation of offshore wind in the Morro Bay wind energy area. The ocean is carrying the weight of the climate crisis. It absorbs over 90% of the excess heat and a quarter of the carbon pollution generated by human activity. Here on the Central Coast, we see the consequences firsthand: rising sea levels, warming waters, and the dramatic loss of critical habitats like our kelp forests. The science demonstrates that transitioning away from fossil fuels is essential to protecting our ocean and our coastal communities. Offshore wind is a critical piece of that transition that offers an opportunity for positive change. Our support for offshore wind is based on both the scientifically determined need for renewables, as well as a firm expectation that projects move forward only under the strongest environmental safeguards and public oversight. We ask that you ensure that any offshore wind development avoids and minimizes harm to marine life, protects public access, cultural resources, and the traditional uses of ocean space, and upholds a transparent, science-based review process that allows for public input and adaptive management. The critical reality is that global energy demand is rising, and the use of fossil fuel-intensive energy production is contributing to the degradation of our planet. Offshore wind does not present us with the choice between clean energy and healthy ocean. In fact, clean energy is part of a healthy ocean. It plays a vital role in reducing our impact on the ocean and championing for California's path towards climate resilience amidst rising energy demand. Let's move forward together to make offshore wind a true climate solution, one that benefits our coast, our communities, and our shared future. Thank you for your service and for your time.
Thank you. Chintan Desai, Carmen Rhodes, Ted Key, and then Russell Johnson.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Chintan Desai, and I'm here today to voice my strong support for offshore wind energy development on the Central Coast. I am deeply connected to this region. Grew up here, came back here at the beginning of the year, and was unfortunately laid off from the role that I was in April. Since then, I've been searching for meaningful employment opportunities in our community. This personal experience has given me a profound understanding of why offshore wind development is so critical for our region. The numbers speak for themselves. According to a Cal Poly School of Business report, the 3 gigawatts of offshore wind planned off Morro Bay could create more than 600 year-round local jobs for the project, and nearly 24,000 additional jobs during the construction phase. These aren't just statistics to me. They represent real opportunities for families like mine and thousands of others on the Central Coast. As someone who served as the campus director for the offshore wind project in May, my team spoke with thousands of Central Coast residents. The overwhelming majority support this project because they understand what I've experienced firsthand. We need more high-quality job opportunities in our community. The offshore wind industry promises to bring good union-paying jobs that will provide stable careers for local workers. Climate change remains the greatest threat to our communities and marine ecosystems. Offshore wind energy is essential for protecting the very environment and the way of life that makes the Central Coast special. Please don't let a vocal minority derail what promises to be a tremendously beneficial project for Central Coast residents. The data, the research, and the voices of hundreds of local supporters all point in the same direction. Offshore wind represents a once-in-a-generation opportunity to create jobs, generate clean energy, and protect our environment for future generations.
Thank you. Next, Carmen Rhodes, Ted Key, Russell Johnson, Mandy Davis.
Good morning, Coastal Commission members. My name is Carmen Rhodes, and I'm a resident of Santa Barbara and the director of the University of California Santa Barbara Community Labor Center. We recently began convening a network of labor, environmental justice, and environmental organizations from San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and Ventura counties, focused on the opportunity to ensure that responsible development of offshore wind benefits our Central Coast communities. If done at scale, offshore wind could create thousands of new good-paying jobs, from manufacturing and construction to operation and maintenance, offering pathways out of poverty and supporting families. These projects can benefit local communities while providing a sustainable energy solution for California's future. However, realizing these benefits won't just happen and requires proactive community engagement and foresight. We urge the Coastal Commission to support the development of community benefits agreements that ensure local residents, especially marginalized and underserved populations, have a voice in project planning and decision making. Such agreements can address local concerns about environmental impacts, access to employment opportunities, and revenue sharing, creating a foundation of trust and shared prosperity. The California Coastal Commission has expressed strong support for meaningful public engagement of disadvantaged communities, recognizing that inclusive decision-making is essential for a just transition. It is imperative that residents of San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and Ventura counties actively participate in this process. These communities stand to benefit from offshore wind projects, but only if their voices are taken into account and translated into action. I urge the California Coastal Commission to champion and prioritize community benefits and ensure local voices are central to offshore wind development. Thank you very much for your leadership.
Thank you. Ted Key, Russell Johnson, Mandy Davis, and Brian Lossell.
Good morning, Ted Key, Cambria. The last time I gave public comment, I suggested covering the state aqueduct system as an alternative solution for passive power rather than the ill-conceived proposed floating offshore wind colossus. This project will create monumental amounts of CO2 to produce and unfathomable volumes of fossil fuels to erect, maintain, and eventually decommission. We mustn't be doing this when CO2 levels continue to rise dramatically, and if the elimination of fossil fuel dependency is the goal, this isn't it. We need results now, according to the IPCC, not a question mark for a decade. Some claim hundreds of miles of subsurface mammoth chain and cables will have minimal effects on sea life. I don't believe that, but the effect of 300 stadium-sized blades on the upwelling is simply unknown by anyone. Advances in solar panel efficiency are staggering. New titanium and perovskite panels from PV Oxford increase their efficiency many times over, and if used for the aqueduct project, begun by the Sacramento Utilities District, would present far less CO2 footprint, distributed power as it's built, minimal maintenance, reduced evaporation, meeting energy needs and providing local jobs statewide. No endless, ugly onshore industrialization appeals for you to deal with. Since I have a couple of minutes and I'm from Cambria, the main reason Cambrians, and I'm telling you, we're unified against this thing, are unified in opposition to this project is the threat of what happened in Nantucket when blades constructed of toxic plastics flew off turbines, washed up as shores on shore, shutting beaches down for months. We cannot have that happen to our Moonstone Beach. I can tell you that the hoteliers are really upset, as they should be, as is Steve Hurst. Tourism is our only economic income. Nobody can tell me that any mitigation by the oil companies will control the lightning, which can explode a turbine easily, much less one at 1,000 feet. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Russell Johnson, Mandy Davis, Brian Lossell, Zach Musharrafi.
Good morning, everybody. Russ Johnson. I live here on the coast. Actually surf right out here. And, man, there's a lot of power in this room, so I appreciate the opportunity to speak. You can't hear me? Okay, it sounded like I was ringing. So can you reset the clock? So anyway, thank you for protecting the coast. Like I said, I surf out here, I'm in the ocean all the time, and really appreciate what you do. I'm speaking today against offshore wind and why it's a bad idea. I first came to the Central Coast in my college for my college education. At the time, the hills above Avila were just covered with big oil tanks. The oil was piped to the pier, sent off to local and world markets, and the oil industry was confident that this would not harm the environment. Yet years later, 50% of Avila had to be torn up, decontaminated. And so my point here is that even with the best intentions, industrialization of our coastal ports can have devastating effects on the environment. Avila is loved by all and heavily used for recreation, boating, and fishing. The last thing we should be doing is building out infrastructure that the roads and port facilities cannot handle. This holds true for Morro Bay as well. So I'm kind of focusing on the onshore part of this, not the offshore. But building these behemoth-sized wind turbines and platforms off our coast and the unknown effect it may have on marine life is just wrong-headed idea. Unfortunately, the moneyed interests are huge and billions of corporate dollars are at stake. Please quash any proposed wind turbine project off our coast. Thank you.
Thank you. Mandy Davis, Brian Lossell, Zach Musharafi, Scott Buckles.
Good morning, you guys, and welcome to the new commissioners. We really appreciate your efforts. My name is Mandy Davis. I am president of REACT Alliance. A little bit of history, those of you that haven't been seeing me for God knows how many years, is REACT Alliance was formed 2.5 years ago to educate the public about the negative impacts of offshore wind. And those negative impacts are many, to say the least. We have been able to educate the public in a large part due to the fact that we have been able to glean all kinds of information from various sources, and they are all pretty much peer-reviewed and very responsible sources to be able to tell people what is going to happen. What I would like to be able to do in the future is, up to this point in time on the permitting processes, we have only given information and data to your staff. That has not proven to be particularly effective, as they have shown bias towards offshore wind, and they have basically not done due diligence. What we plan on doing in the future is every time we send studies, data, information that will help you make a decision on offshore wind, that will not only go to your staff, but every single one of you will get a packet. And before I go any farther, I would like to turn around and ask people here, those of you that are here to oppose offshore wind, I would like you to stand up, please. So they have the people that are here to propose that we continue on with offshore wind would like you to believe that the majority of the public is for it. It is not. The majority of the public is against offshore wind. Please listen to us. Thank you.
Thank you. Brian Lossell, Zach Musharafi, Scott Buckles, Asia Hudson.
Hi, my name is Brian Lossell. I want to thank you guys for being here, and we appreciate your presence. I've been a resident of 44 years of San Luis Obispo City, and I'm just here to basically say I really appreciate Diablo Canyon and PG being in our community. I mean, they provide over 1,300 well-paying jobs, living jobs, union jobs. During the outages, they provide over 1,000 seasonal jobs, and I think that's just a economic powerhouse to our community. Another piece of their great presence as a corporate partner is their educational piece to our San Luis Obispo districts, school districts. I mean, given these dynamic times, I think every dollar we can put back into our school systems is a benefit. Without educating our society and having well-educated local residents, let alone just students are going to populate through the nation and our state, I think that's a fantastic contribution as them being a partner in this community. Lastly, with AI, whether we like it or not, it's here, as a power source, PG&E producing, I think, over 10% of the power in our state grid, I think going forward with that technology, we're going to need to continue to have them licensed and online and providing that power to our state grid. I mean, it's inevitable that that we're going to need that power going forward and beyond 2030 and beyond their production needs. And so California being the seventh largest economy in the world, I think AI is going to continue to impact everybody's lives as it continues to ramp out. Thank you so much for your time, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. Next, Zach Mosharafi, Scott Buckles, Asia Hudson, Glenn Siloway.
Hello. Thank you, commissioners. My name is Zach Mosharafi, and I'm a student at Cal Poly and the president of the Nuclear's Clean Energy Club there. We're dedicated to spreading awareness and information about nuclear energy. I will be speaking about the Diablo Canyon Power Plant. I've had the opportunity to visit Diablo Canyon twice now. The lands of Diablo Canyon are some of the best preserved coastlines in America, and it's honestly amazing to see. And scientists at the plant are constantly monitoring the wildlife and have not found any adverse effects to the plant's operation. I've hiked the Point Bouchon Trail from Los Osos down to the lands of the power plant, and it's great to see how small of a footprint the largest producer of energy in the state occupies. As time goes on, the energy needs of this country are only going to rise with electrification of new systems, and as the previous speaker mentioned, AI. So it's important to keep the largest producer of energy in the state operational and the largest producer of clean energy in the state. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Scott Buckles, Asia Hudson, Glenn Siloway, Sherry Hafer.
Well, hi there. Good morning. Thank you guys for coming to Pismo Beach. I'm a resident of Pismo Beach as well, so it's wonderful to have you here on the coast. Hopefully the marine layer burns off. I wanted to talk a sec about the Pecho Coast Trail. It's right here in Avila. It's on the Diablo Canyon lands that he mentioned. I volunteer there, have been volunteering for about 5 years as a docent. It's getting harder to keep public access on that trail. PG&E has kind of shifted a little bit. I think there was an amazing woman in this role, Sally Kren, a long time ago. And today, there's no good incentive. So the problems, kids under 9 can't go on the trail. That's really weird. And by the way, that's a trail that the kids would go from the lighthouse to school and back every single day, twice a day, 130 years ago. The other thing that we ran into trouble with was same-day signups are not allowed anymore. So if we have open spots, we're only allowed to take 40 people on the weekends. PG&E will not let us do it anymore. That's kind of a new thing. And then I would say the third thing that we're struggling with is they've also changed their online sign-up so that you can't sign up if it's within 48 hours. That's also kind of a new thing. I just wanted to bring it to your attention. I tried to work with Linda Lachlan a year ago. Just want to make sure you guys are aware of it. Last but all, thank you for what you do. Love what you do for protecting the coast. I really appreciate it. Listening to everybody here too, I would say I'm also pro power plant and I live right next to it. We want clean energy, all of the energy that we can get. And then of course, I think on the wind, I'm super mixed. I love green energy, battery electric, solar, battery, everything. Yeah, I don't love the oil. I don't love the idea that it could destroy the beach either. I'll share that with you guys, but thank you for your time.
Excuse me through the chair. Can you say the name of that trail one more time?
Sorry, Pecho Coast Trail.
Great, thank you.
Cool.
Thank you. Next, Asia Hudson, Glenn Siloway, Sherry Hafer, Paul Gallo.
Good morning. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Asia Hudson, a marine conservation analyst and program manager at the Environmental Defense Center, a public interest law firm that defends natural and advanced nature. Let me back up. Defends nature and advances environmental justice on California's Central Coast through advocacy and legal action. We primarily work in San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and Ventura counties. We support a robust, equitable, and science-driven planning, permitting, and leasing process for offshore wind energy in the region. The ocean is experiencing a biodiversity crisis caused by warming water temperatures, ocean acidification, shifts in key oceanographic features and habitat availability, and other harmful changes due to fossil fuel-driven climate change. The resulting climate crisis demands immediate progress in transitioning away from our fossil-fueled economy. The state's goal to diversify our energy portfolio does not need to conflict with the need to protect biodiversity. We can and need to accomplish both goals. When developed responsibly, offshore wind can provide an important opportunity to increase access to renewable energy, reduce carbon emissions and air pollution, and improve grid reliability. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you all, and thank you for the awesome job you guys are doing.
Thank you. Next, Glenn Siloway, Sherry Hafer, Paul Gallo, Sarah Rizzo.
Good morning, Commission. Thanks for joining us again here in this county. My name is Glenn Siloway. I'm a resident of Morro Bay for 20 years. I'm here to urge you to consider positively offshore wind in the future. This is a long-term solution, but it's one we need to add to our arsenal. Climate change is being driven by the use of fossil fuels. We know that. It's established by science. It's not going to change until we do something about it. Wind energy is part of the solution. I'm a birder and an open space advocate, and I know from the inside that there are threats and dangers in all of the solutions we come up with. Every technology we've ever had has had some issues with it. We've had to mitigate or do trade-offs, and that's not going to be any different for offshore wind than anything else. But I want to save all the whales, and I would like to save all the diversity of life we can. And that means we have to stop burning fossil fuels. We have to do it now. So as far as fossil fuels go, yes, in my backyard, and as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Sherry Hafer, Paul Gallo, Sarah Rizzo, Alyssa Buckles.
Good morning. I have a slideshow presentation. It should be coming up.
We're bringing it up.
I'm here. I represent the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization, and I'm also a director of REACT Alliance. I'm coming to speak to you about the CDP that you issued to Atlas Wind, July 12, 2024. It allows them to do site survey work for cable routes for offshore wind to be sited at Dog Beach. This is a beautiful picture of Dog Beach. Next slide. We just found out in February, and I've been hounding you guys since then, that this area is protected by a land conservancy. It's a three-phase plan. It's called the Toro Creek County Park Land Conservancy. There's been millions of dollars spent to protect this property that was once owned by Chevron. 3,000 acres, but is being sold off. And in 2012, several people in Slo County said, no, let's protect it from any residential or commercial development. In blue, it was that was purchased to the Dog Beach area in 2021, long before the CDP was approved. Okay, next slide. So this is the actual area of Dog Beach that is between Cayucas and Morro Bay that it has restrictive covenants. Next slide. So these are the restrictive covenants. I have enough time to read through them all, but they're basically to protect the wildlife, the steelhead trout, red-legged frog, because it has also watershed protections, the tidewater goby, riparian habitat. You get the idea. Okay, next slide. So this is what Atlas Wind proposed to you guys. I was kind of concerned. We got correspondence back saying that you haven't got any kind of plan to go to that area, but that's not true. Just because there's approval for a site survey there. So just go to the next slide. I just wanted to just go to the next slide. So in pink is what you guys approved. It's to go to that exact area that's protected. That should be revoked because it's not legal. And you guys need to better evaluate your landing sites first. Okay.
Thank you. Paul Gallo, Sarah Rizzo, Alyssa Buckles, Courtney Keano. You just turned off. Yeah. There you go.
Good. Thanks. And staff. My name is Paul Gallo, and I'm a resident of the Central Coast and with REACT Alliance. I've been following the proposed development of offshore wind off our coast here in San Luis Obispo County for several years. It's become clear to me that this endeavor has been systematically rolled out with great deception. The initial pitch by wind developers was that it is over 20 miles offshore and you won't see it, essentially out of sight, out of mind. The wind companies, BOEM, and state and federal governments have failed to fully inform the public of the multitude of nearshore and onshore impacts that will result from the offshore wind projects. REACT Alliance, an independent grassroots organization with absolutely no connection to the fossil fuel industry, has been working tirelessly for the past 2 years to help Central Coast residents understand the impacts offshore wind energy will bring to our precious coastline. We have gained tremendous insight into the environmental and economic consequences that offshore wind energy projects have brought to the East Coast in the past several years. It was just a year ago this week that a turbine blade failure resulted in tons of debris entering the ocean off Nantucket. This resulted in the closure of one of the most visited beaches in Massachusetts. And that was actually in like low wind speeds. I think it was under 10 miles an hour. So I can't imagine what would happen off our coast in the adverse weather conditions we often get. I would implore the commission and your staff to learn from the many ongoing consequences of offshore wind projects. It is your duty to protect and preserve our precious Central Coast, and saving the earth doesn't mean destroying our oceans. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Sarah Rizzo, Alyssa Buckles, Courtney Keenow, Liz Summer.
Good morning. Sarah Rizzo, resident of Avila Beach for 35 years. First of all, welcome to the beautiful Central Coast, Commissioners. It's wonderful to have you here. I think the last time I spoke to you was about 30 years ago down in Huntington Beach. Back then, I was a young attorney, and I took on UNICAL with a bunch of other people, and we fought to clean up Avila Beach. And if you go down there, it's a beautiful clean, and thank you, Commissioners, back then. Again, I'm here now talking about Avila Beach, and as you can see by my blue shirt, I am opposed to offshore wind. Living there, and now I have the opportunity to raise my two young, beautiful boys in Avila Beach. In the court of law, I use expert witnesses all the time, but there's something you do not need to be an expert about, and that's a thing of common knowledge, something that you can see for yourselves. And now that you're here, take the opportunity, if you have during a lunch break, drive 2-3 miles up north, visit Avila Beach, Port San Luis Obispo, a godsend. We have whales breaching up there, international news. It's considered one of the most beautiful, pristine beaches. Access to everybody, poor people, rich people, people of color. People come from the Central Coast. People come from Visalia Valley. When it heats up, they come over here and recreate. Go there, take a look at it. You don't need to be an expert to imagine what's going to happen with a big new pier out there. That's what they want to do, an operation and maintenance port. Ships coming in 24/7. And not only that, when they're going to have to be repairing, maintaining these huge 900-foot wind turbines, you're going to see them from here. You're going to see them from Pismo. You're going to see them everywhere. They're big and they're ugly. And it'll destroy Avila Beach. It'll destroy Port San Luis Obispo. This is not the place for that to happen. I urge you, you're all wise, you're all smart. Take a look at it. Go to Kraken's, have a cup of coffee, and see why we are here to protect the coast. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Alyssa Buckles, Courtney Keenow, Liz Summer, Randall Jordan.
Hi, I'm Alyssa Buckles, and I live in Pismo.
You can
Beach.
Pull that mic right down.
Yes.
Just feel free. Put it right where you need it.
Thank you. I'm Alyssa Buckles. I live in Pismo Beach, and I would like to talk to you about the Pecos Coast Trail and how people under nine, can't join. I climbed Half Dome when I was 7. Yeah. Thank you. It was really scary from what I remember. but I think it was pretty cool. We started it at 5 a.m., I think, and we didn't get back to our cabin at the nearby hotel at, like, 12. It was a long hike. But and then I fell in love with the outdoors so much that I joined the BSA all-girls troop at 10 years old. I'm now 12. And I think it would be really cool if 9-year-olds could join and under with adult supervision because it's a really great hike. I like it. And I think there's a swing there. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for all you done.
Thanks so much. You're Thank awesome. You. 12 years old.
Thank you. Courtney Kiano, Liz Summer, Randall Jordan, Bridget Day.
It's a real hard act to follow. Good morning, commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to speak and welcome. My name is Courtney Kino, and I'm here on behalf of Cal Poly President Jeff Armstrong. As a public university, Cal Poly is committed to sustainability, energy innovation, and preparing the next generation, as we just saw, to solve the most pressing challenges of our time, including climate change and energy resilience. We view Diablo Canyon Power Plant as a vital part of California's clean energy future. We rely on clean energy sources like Diablo Canyon to achieve our goal of carbon neutrality by 2030. Its operation also supports our researchers, students, and faculty who depend on stable power to operate campus facilities and to advance innovation in renewables, energy storage, and climate smart technologies. Diablo Canyon has served as a living laboratory for Cal Poly students and faculty in disciplines ranging from environmental science to nuclear engineering. It offers a real-world context for understanding energy systems, marine ecosystems, and regulatory frameworks. Additionally, the plant's employees are deeply woven into the fabric of our region. As head of household wage earners, community volunteers, and contributors to local nonprofits and youth programs, the economic and civic impact of this workforce cannot be overstated. We also recognize the significance of 12,000 acres of coastal land surrounding the plant, land that includes culturally sacred sites for the Yaktichu Titu, Yaktilhimi, Northern Chumash tribe, and the potential for future public access that complements the neighboring Montana de Oro State Park. While Cal Poly does not take a position on whether the plant's operating license should be renewed, we want to recognize the many contributions PG&E makes in our local community. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Next, Liz Summer, Randall Jordan, Bridget Day, Antonio Gonzalez Bradford.
Good morning. My name is Liz Summer. I welcome you here, and thank you for spending some time with us in this beautiful section of the coast of California. I moved here 30 years ago. I've been very involved in the community since I moved here. Our youngest was 2. He just turned 32. And now our 3 children have all relocated back to this area and are raising their children here. I'm here today to support Diablo and to continue the operation of it. I've spent time at the plant. I've spent time at the water around the plant with biologists. And what Diablo does for this community is great, but it's also good for what it does with the state of California and the production of electricity, as it's been brought up today. AI is going to continue to suck more electricity, as well as vehicles, and it has to come from somewhere. Diablo has been a partner to this community, to the nonprofits. I support it, and I just wanted to go on record as an individual, as a mother and a grandmother, with the 3rd generation of our family being raised here now, in support of this plant. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, Randall Jordan, Bridget Day, Antonio Gonzalez Bradford, Colette Beach.
Thank you guys for being here. Thank you for coming to the Central Coast. We really appreciate your work, and thank you. I'm here in support of Diablo Canyon. I am a 41-year resident of the Central Coast and actually live very far north in this county, San Miguel. I am more interested in keeping Diablo open for basically personal reasons. I run a small construction company up in Paso Robles, been there for 41 years, same time I've been here. And we are seeing the trend, and this has happened over the last 25 years, for all electric homes. We're seeing heat pumps for FAU units. We're seeing heat pumps for heating water. We're seeing the phasing out of natural gas, which I don't agree with. But electricity is very important, very, very important to us in our industry. Also, for me personally, we live, like I say, in rural San Miguel. and we have had 4 brownouts so far. One was 2 days long. Luckily, we get notified by PG&E, but it's very inconvenient to plan your life around not having electricity. And if we take away Diablo Canyon, it's going to be worse. Diablo Canyon has been there since 1985 and has been maintenance-free and actually very, very safe. As someone already said, it has provides 1,300 household jobs for this county, which we desperately need, and it's a good partner for us here in San Luis Obispo County. So please keep Diablo Canyon open. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Bridget Day, Antonio Gonzalez Bradford, Colette Beach, Rita Benavides.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Bridget, and I work for the Central Coast Labor Council. We are a coalition of 75 labor unions representing over 70,000 members in SLO, Santa Barbara, and Ventura counties. This includes workers in the energy sector, from fossil fuels and nuclear to emerging clean energy fields like solar, wind, hydrogen, and battery storage. Recently, the Labor Council has embarked on a coalition building effort alongside community-based organizations and environmental organizations who are committed to both workers' rights and environmental justice throughout the Central Coast. We are unified by a shared vision to remake our energy economy and provide good union jobs to more residents throughout the region and the entire state. Local communities and workers are uniting to call for more career opportunities, training programs, and pathways to middle-class jobs and clean energy. The decisions this commission makes over the next several years will have a profound impact on our ability to recruit, train, and hire the energy workforce of tomorrow. We are here today to make sure you know that this community and its workers are ready to meet and exceed the lofty clean energy goals set forth by the state of California. Thank you guys so much for being here.
Thank you. Antonio Gonzalez Bradford, Colette Beach, Rita Benavides, Susan Callery.
Good morning, commissioners. I am here to speak in support of offshore wind energy projects. I speak not only as a UCSB student, but also a resident and worker of Santa Barbara County. Through my time at UCSB, I've had the privilege to learn about the complicated history of the Central Coast with fossil fuels, nuclear power, and our community effort to lead the clean energy transition in California. It's not often that we get to talk about an idea with the potential to fundamentally reshape the future of the Central Coast, not just for the environment, but for our local economy, our job market, and all of our residents for years to come. These new industries don't just need engineers. They need construction workers, a manufacturing workforce, scientists, policy experts, environmental analysts, data specialists, and public communicators, all roles my generation is prepared to fill. As these projects come online, they'll give students like me a chance to learn a trade, apply their skills, and stay connected to their communities rather than get pushed out by housing costs and job scarcity, problems far too common in our region today. This isn't just a climate issue. It's a student issue, a labor issue, and a regional development opportunity. Approving projects like this means choosing a future where students can stay, work, and thrive right here on the Central Coast. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Colette Beach, Rita Benavides, Susan Callery, Gary Wolner. Okay, then next will be Rita Benavides.
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you for your time. So offshore wind has been presented as a clean energy solution, but the truth is the proposed infrastructure would totally industrialize our ports, destroy vital ecosystems, and introduce irreversible harm to species that depend on undisturbed ocean habitat. We're talking about seismic testing, dredging, noise pollution, increased ship traffic, which all have deep impacts to resident and migrating marine mammals, birds, fish, and plankton. Entire fishing grounds will become impacted and threatening the livelihood of our local fisheries. And despite its green label, offshore wind depends on diesel fleets. Toxic gases like sulfur hexafluoride, which is the most potent greenhouse known, and a carbon-heavy construction and maintenance. And even BOEM, the Bureau of Energy Ocean Energy Management, explicitly states, and I quote, "Overall, it is anticipated that there would be no collective impact on global warming as a result of offshore wind projects." So this whole climate change, it's going to save everything, is completely false. And it'll never replace oil because it depends on it. So I urge you from the bottom of my heart, from all of our hearts, to protect our very precious coast. It is your job, after all, the one we count on you to do with awareness and care. That is why we, the people, the taxpayers who live here, appeal to you to halt the development of offshore wind on the central coast of California. We need real solutions, not reckless experiments with irreversible consequences. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Susan Callery, Gary Wolner, Mark Simonin, Ava Curtis.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Susan Callery, and I thank you for being here in the Central Coast. I am retired from NASA. I led NASA's climate website, and I led Earth Science Communications out of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. So I'm very familiar with the impacts of fossil fuels and the need for good, clean, renewable energy. I'm also a grandmother, and I also rely on data and peer-reviewed science for my information. So the oceans are planet's heat sponge. As Mr. McNevin said, 91% of the energy from our warming climate due to fossil fuels ends up in the ocean. And believe it or not, since 1950, the ocean has taken up the energy of 8 billion atomic bombs every second of every day. It's frightening. That's why marine heat waves are killing whales, thousands of whales. And laughing doesn't do any good. This is all public, this is all peer-reviewed research. It's sickening, it is true, sickening marine mammals along the coast due to a combination of warming waters and fertilizer runoff and wiping out fish populations. The ocean's in trouble, and so are we unless we act. We need clean, renewable energy, including offshore wind, to protect our kids and grandkids. It must be done responsibly with community input, with care for people, wildlife, and our communities, but we cannot wait. The ocean isn't waiting. And I don't know if I have time, but I would like to address a couple of the comments. One saying there is no, BOEM says there's no impact on global warming. If they may finish that.
Just finish your thought very
quickly.
Okay,
that was taken out of context. It means that the building of offshore wind and the usage of offshore wind does not add to global warming. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Gary Wolner, Mark Simonin, Ava Curtis, Lexi Head.
Welcome, commissioners. I really appreciate you being here. And I'm a very small cog in obviously a very big wheel here. So I just want to talk about this. My name is Gary Wolner, and I am a local resident of AG. I strongly support offshore wind energy because I understand the science behind human-caused climate change. Our region has a rare opportunity to lead California's transition to clean energy and meet the state's offshore wind goals. We can't keep burning fossil fuels, that's pretty clear. If we do, Earth will keep getting hotter. Ocean temperatures and acidification will rise. We'll face longer heat waves, stronger storms like the ones we've had in Texas, more intense wildfires, including those right here in our own county, and rising seas. Flooding is becoming more frequent, with the sharpest increases along the Gulf Coast, East Coast, and Hawaii. Fossil fuels also harm the ecosystems we rely on. droughts, heat waves, and floods are damaging our farmlands and threatening our food supply. I understand that opposition voices are loud, but they are not grounded in peer-reviewed science. It's much easier to stir fear and resistance than to inspire action and solutions. I urge you to follow the empirical evidence as you move forward. The decisions we make today will shape the future of our community, our state, and our planet. Thank you very much for allowing me to talk. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Excuse me, Chris. Before we continue, can I ask the audience to please not react to speakers while they're giving testimony, either silently or out loud? It's very distracting, and we would like to give every speaker our full attention. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Mark Simonin, Ava Curtis, Lexi Head, June McIver.
Good morning, Chair Harmon and Commissioners. We sure appreciate you guys taking the opportunity to come to our beautiful area and experience this and have your meeting here. My name is Mark Simonin. I'm a labor representative for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. I was reading my PIN that got issued to me a little bit ago. Clean Coast Power really suits our area. We're uniquely categorized here with the clean energy. We have the energy that developed out in Crease Plains with Topaz Solar Farm, which has been instrumental. Diablo Canyon, I'm a third generation employee of Diablo Canyon, working there to support my family, my father, my nephew. We've all been parts of Diablo Canyon and what great clean energy that has brought to our area and an economic driver. So we're very supportive from the IBEW's perspective. Training, these jobs bring training. We're supportive of the offshore wind, but we do believe it wholeheartedly in these type of meetings where we have the ability to be pros and cons, whatever the case is. I know that the cons, whether we're pro or cons, do make these jobs stronger, safer, more efficient. The training is going to be, the IBEW started training for offshore wind currently. We are part of the offshore wind on the East Coast. We're very involved. We've developed new and better, safer methods. And we are confident that the infrastructure here is very well suited in San Luis Obispo County to complement what we have with Diablo Canyon, with the potential that we do have battery storage here developed locally. Some of you guys are aware, we just came online with a battery storage in Napomo, safer, better. We did have some experiences up north a little bit that were adverse, but at the end of the day, that technology is changing. Over the last decade, we've seen a lot of improvements, and we do see everything, how it complements with Diablo Canyon, offshore wind, and storage are critical for our future. And we appreciate your time, and we appreciate you coming to our area. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Ava Curtis, Lexi Head, June McIver, Peter Schwartz.
Good morning, and thank you for having me. My name is Ava Curtis. I'm an agricultural science student and researcher at Cal Poly, and have served as a climate education fellow with Slow Climate Coalition for 2 years, and I support offshore wind energy. As a Gen Z college student, my friends and I are coming to age at the precipice of environmental and social disaster, and it is abundantly clear that we must fight for people and for the planet. Despite the controversy of offshore wind energy, it's important to remember that we are on the same team. Pardon? Okay. We're on the same team. I think it's safe to say that everyone here cares what happens to our community, what happens to our ocean, and what happens to our planet. Given this, it is critical to understand that now more than ever, we need solutions to the climate crisis that is unfolding before us. Offshore wind energy is a part of that solution, and we are fortunate to have it available to us in the Central Coast. It's inarguable based on the scientific literature that wind energy produces substantially less carbon emissions than fossil fuel, and evidence suggests that some marine animals prefer offshore wind developments as a reef-like refuge. While it is impossible to know all of the consequences to this development before it is constructed and operational, it is one of the tools that our community has to combat fossil fuel emissions. As our situation becomes more dire, it becomes vital that we do everything we can to make our community more sustainable. We're on the same team. We want the best for our world, and the net positives of wind energy vastly outweigh the potential negatives. Our community must do its part to fight climate change, and we have the opportunity to set an example for our state, our country, and the world. Let's make it a good example. Let's start today, and let's stand united against climate change and fossil fuels. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Lexi Head, June McIver, Peter Schwartz, Tricia Boaz.
Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. My name is Lexi Head. I live in San Luis Obispo, and I'm here with Slow Climate Coalition. I'm here today to speak in support of offshore wind development in the Central Coast because I care deeply about what our environment and my future on this planet. Supporting responsible clean energy and moving away from fossil fuels is one of the most meaningful ways that I can act on that. Here on the Central Coast, we're lucky to not yet face the worst effects of climate change, but that doesn't mean that we're immune. Every year throughout the world, the U.S., and right here in California, we see hotter temperatures, our seasonal weather becomes weirder, and we see more destructive natural disasters. This is all the result of the climate crisis, and that's exactly why we need clean energy solutions like offshore wind. The offshore wind projects are going to minimize our reliance on fossil fuels for daily living on the Central Coast, and while every project has a carbon footprint, the emissions from building offshore wind are minimal compared to the massive and ongoing damage caused by fossil fuels. In return, we get long-term local renewable energy and a real chance to cut emissions at the scale this moment demands. I do not believe people against the offshore wind project understand the severity of our current climate crisis, as no opponents have suggested alternative clean energy solutions, except for the solar over the aqueducts now. The one thing we know for sure, though, is continuing to rely on fossil fuels will make life harder for everyone, whether on land or in the ocean, human and non-human alike. You may have heard that our sea life, whales and birds, will be threatened by the installation of offshore wind, and this is false. The reality is that the sea life is already feeling the impact of a warming ocean, and without bold action, their habitat and ours will only become more hostile and more unlivable. We need offshore wind. We need to reduce our reliance on fossil fuels, and we need to act now. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. June McIver, Peter Schwartz, Tricia Boaz, Don Gade.
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you for being here. My name is June McIver. I'm a 22-year resident of San Luis Obispo County, raised my family here. I know that you know that climate change is the ultimate threat to our oceans, our coast, and our planet. That getting to 100% renewable energy is critical to slowing climate change, and that responsibly developed offshore wind is an important part of getting to those goals. What I want you to know is that outside of a vocal, but ultimately small group of NIMBYers, if that's a word, there is strong support in San Luis Obispo County for offshore wind off the Central Coast, both for reaching our clean energy goals and for the potential economic benefits to our region. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, Peter Schwartz, Tricia Boaz, Don Gade, George Hansen.
Good morning and welcome to the Central Coast. My name is Pete Schwartz. I'm a 25-year resident, raised my family here in San Luis Obispo. I'm also a physics professor at Cal Poly and a specialist in energy, society, environmental issues. And yes, I recognize that when we engage in something new, offshore wind is really relatively new, especially on the West Coast where we drop off and they have to float the wind turbines. There's going to be some unknowns that we need to study. But the alternative is really well known, that what climate change is doing is really untenable, and it behooves us to develop renewable energy, clean energy, nuclear energy as an alternative. That we may be divided on what is the best technology, but the enemy, and I'm addressing you and I'm addressing everyone else in the room, is that we need to develop the alternatives. And we talk about the massive die-offs of marine life because of climate change. I mean, it's been mentioned here. And amongst the animals that are killed through climate change, my primary concern is humans. And we see it. We're reading it right now in the news, from heat waves, from hurricanes, the floods in Texas, the forest fires right here in San Luis Obispo and Southern California. And that's just from climate change. The emissions, the direct emissions of particulate matter and pollutants from burning also claims approximately 10% of human life, is a recent study. So In any case, I advocate for moving forward, developing these technologies and studying it. When I think back 20 years when I first came here, a lot of the opposition that I'm hearing now was very similar to the Carrizo plane opposition. And so, I advocate for two things. We need to study this.
Please finish your thought.
And please lean into Cal Poly. We're here. We're scientists. We'd love to study this stuff. Contact me directly if there's anything I can do.
Thank you. Next, Tricia Bowes, Don Gade, George Hansen, Kathleen Bond.
Good morning, Chair, members of the Commission and staff, and fellow passionate people. I am Tricia Bassey Bowes. I am a fourth generation, I guess, NIMBY now being called. When Green Light Project came, they are proponents of the offshore wind project to town. They posted a video online supporting the offshore wind project. They got 88 comments. 100% of them were negative. Examples: I will fight until my dying breath to keep this from happening. The biggest grift and scam to hit California. No way. I've seen the plans, and it destroys the landscape of Avila. There is an empty stretch. Hell no. I've seen the plans. This would destroy the ecosystem. Avila Beach is already home to safe and reliable nuclear power plant, which can be upgraded and maintained to provide all of the power without wrecking Port San Luis, which I grew up enjoying. My mother and her parents grew up enjoying as well. Healthy eco-ocean systems, where the hell do you get that insane comment from? You can't tell me that won't mess up whales, dolphins, and other millions of sea creatures. Straight up propaganda. Hell no. Scam. These are people that couldn't be here today. I'm sure they are working. And how will the tens of thousands of jobs that are mentioned in this video be created? There's a lot of misinformation going on around about the benefits of this offshore wind project. There is no net economic or environmental benefit from this project. And this project, offshore wind, relies on fossil fuels. If you go home with anything, all this talk about no fossil fuels and reliance, offshore wind relies on fossil fuels to operate.
Thank you. Next, Don Gade, George Hansen, Kathleen Bond, Courtney Shepler.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Don Gady, and I'm a resident of San Luis Obispo. As you're aware, the mission of the California Coastal Commission is to protect and enhance the California coast and oceans for present and future generations. Well, there's no greater threat to the coast and the ocean than climate change. Emissions from fossil fuels are fueling climate change, and offshore wind energy is one of the critical ways we can do to wean ourselves off of those fossil fuels. Every method to produce energy has a certain carbon footprint, but the footprint of offshore wind is 1/40th of that of natural gas-fueled power plants. As a physician, I'm concerned about the adverse health effects of burning fossil fuels and climate change on our patients. By replacing fossil fuels with clean energy, offshore wind projects can help protect the public health while meeting our energy needs. And finally, I'd just like to mention the many, many environmental groups that support offshore wind. Locally, we have the Sierra Club, Cal Poly Initiative for Climate Leadership, Morro Coast Audubon Society, Slow Climate Coalition, and my group, the Slow County Citizens Climate Education. Nationally, we have National Audubon Society, Environmental Defense Fund, National Resources Defense Council, NOAA Fisheries, National Wildlife Federation. I think most of us here are on the same page. We want to see a healthy environment for our children and our grandchildren. Let's follow the science and encourage the development of this valuable energy resource. Thank you.
Thank you. George Hansen, Kathleen Bond, Courtney Shelper, Kurt Tyner.
Hey, I'm George Hansen from Rio Grande. Esteemed members of the Coast Commission, thank you for hearing us. I've been hearing a lot of questionable statements about how an offshore wind facility might not benefit the community and environment of the coastal zone. I'd like to address some of those statements, especially those that pertain to tourism, fishing, and recreation. We can stack up real-world experience against speculation, a verifiable real-world experience. I submitted the article in which this is based at the sign-up, and we encourage you to look at that if you wish to see the or what backs up the statement. So we can look at the experience of the Block Island Wind Farm off Rhode Island. This started operation in 2016. It is located just 3.8 miles off the coast, and Block Island is heavily dependent on tourism, fishing, and recreation. What they did is they interviewed several hundred tourists in Block Island, and they asked them about how seeing the wind farm off the shore there affected them. And they found that about half the respondents were indifferent, neither positive or negative to turbines, and that was across all recreational activities. On the whole, those who had seen the turbines in person reported a positive experience. In monetary terms, they looked at whether people would say they would pay more to visit whether the turbines were there, and they found that on average, those who had seen the turbines in person reported that they would pay more to visit, to fish, and to stay there with the presence of the turbines. Just knowing that the turbines were there in the community produced approximately $20 million improvement in tourist-generated revenue. That the turbines were there generated $20 million. They even have ferries and charter boats bringing people out there and increased fishing in the area. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, Kathleen Bond, Courtney Shelper, Kurt Tyner, Dr. Aaron Purse.
Commissioners, good morning. Happy to see you this morning. I would like to give you some good news. And I'll do that by picking up on Don Gady's list of organizations that support accelerating offshore wind development. And that organization is the Nature Conservancy. It's a global organization of over 70 countries and territories, and they, just like you, work to support the conservation of land and of water around our globe. Now, I want you to consider three strategies that the Nature Conservancy employs. The first is to use scientific data to support decision making. Use the real science. The second is to develop policies based on the science. And the third is something we have the opportunity to become, a demonstration site for best practices. I would like to read to you a statement from the Nature Conservancy. Rapid deployment of offshore wind energy is a critical part of the clean energy transition and can be done in ways that are nature friendly. Thank you for your work, commissioners. Good morning.
Thank you. Next, Courtney Shelper, Dr. Aaron Pierce, Mara Stevens.
Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. My name is Courtney Shepler, and I'm a resident of Morro Bay. For the better part of the last 20 years, I have been a climate migrant. I lived in Louisiana when, in 2005, the state was walloped with hurricanes Katrina and Rita. We didn't feel it was safe to stay, and we relocated to California shortly thereafter. In 2021, the record-breaking Caldor fire came within 3 miles of my home at Lake Tahoe, and we realized it wasn't safe to stay, as that beautiful paradise was also at risk. This past weekend, nearly 30 children died at the summer camp I attended as a girl due to a record-breaking rain event. How many more records do we need to break before we do something? This is all related to climate change. Where will it be safe to stay? It's not that I have bad luck. This is happening to hundreds of millions of people around the globe.
Climate change is real. We must find solutions. I am not afraid of the solutions. I'm afraid of the status quo. Offshore wind is absolutely a solution we should be welcoming with open minds. Legitimate concerns can be addressed. However, lies, misinformation, and conspiracy theories have no place in this discussion. I welcome offshore wind as a solution to climate change and also as an opportunity for our community to be a leader in slowing the impact of climate change and to be a beneficiary of the positive economic impacts. Please use your platform to create meaningful, fact, and science-based public participation. Thank you.
And thank you. Sorry we had your name entered incorrectly. Next is Dr. Aaron Pierce, Mara Stevens, Andrea Seastrand, and Michael Foote.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to comment. I'm Aaron Pierce, the director for the Initiative for Climate Leadership and Resilience at Cal Poly and a professor in the mathematics department. My comments are in support of responsible offshore wind development in the Morro Bay Call area. As a basic premise, our population will continue to increase. Also, our society will continue to require electricity. Additionally, we can expect these needs to increase with our technological advancement and to increase as our economy transitions towards clean energy. So, how do we provide power in the most responsible and least environmentally impactful way? Offshore wind is a critical part of the power supply mix that cannot be readily replaced by other clean energy sources due to its scalability, its efficiency, its small environmental footprint, its benefits to grid stability, and its proximity to load centers, which results in a corresponding reduced transmission loss. For example, the entire country of Uruguay now uses 97% renewable energy, and they did not do this using any batteries. They solve the challenges of solar intermittency entirely by balancing the power supply mix with offshore wind, biomass, and hydro. Consequently, any decision against offshore wind development is effectively a decision in favor of fossil fuel development. These decisions can be influenced by misinformation, and so it is important to be on your guard. According to investigations by Brown University, the Center for American Progress, and multiple other research teams, fossil fuel corporations are actively spreading misinformation about offshore wind and exaggerating impacts in a bid to discourage development. You actually heard one specific example of such a misinterpretation during today's comments, that BOEM, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, claims offshore wind would not impact the climate crisis. In fact, the report states that offshore wind would not impact the environment negatively. With respect to emissions, effluent ecosystems damage, transportation impacts, material life cycle analysis, and other metrics, the impacts of fossil fuel energy are orders of magnitude more extreme. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Mara Stevens, Andrea Seastrand, Michael Foote.
Good morning, commissioners. Welcome to our beautiful Central Coast. Really appreciate the opportunity to speak. And if you're staying in the area, I invite you to go out tonight and look at the full moon on the ocean. There's just nothing quite like it. And I think it will move your souls, your hearts, which is what I'm appealing to today, your hearts and your divine intelligence, which I know you all have and were given at birth. And I think if you really search your hearts and just look around, and as Mr. Soros suggested, go down to Avila and remember that there are whales, dozens of whales, in that small bay a few years ago when I was working in Sea Canyon at Kelsey Winery, having babies and spawning there, and it was nationwide news. People come there to get married. They bring their children there, as many people have already spoken who've lived here for decades, three or four generations worth of people, the trails. And the truth is that those who are saying that offshore wind is green are misinformed, ill-informed. These turbines are not recyclable. The blades are not recyclable. At best, they may last 20 years if they don't break off and pollute the area or catch on fire or function well at all in our fickle wind. This is not a green energy. There's many, many ties to fossil fuel companies, actually. And for the gentleman and I think a lady that mentioned groups like the Sierra Club, the Audubon Society, and the Nature Conservancy, all being for offshore wind, I urge you to take a look at who funds those groups. Orsted is one of them, connected to the Nature Conservancy, and they are wind companies that give millions of dollars to those groups like the Sierra Club, who have been captured, obviously, by big corporate money. Thank you for hearing our comments today.
Thank you. Next, Andrea Seastrand, Michael Foote. And that would conclude our in-person speakers. Then from there, we'll go to Zoom, starting with Adam Leverins, Sandy Manich, and Elena Tillman.
Well, welcome to San Luis Obispo County, 58 counties, and I'm here to say that San Luis is the most beautiful county in California. So enjoy your stay. I've been a resident of the Central Coast for many years. In fact, I was trying to count on my fingers and toes. I think it's been over 30 years. And I reside right south of Diablo Canyon Power Plant. Never worried about the safety factor and always very supportive of the activities at Diablo. I want to emphasize that nuclear power is a clean energy, and it's right here in our backyard, providing electricity, what is needed today. With the grid very shaky, we need more electricity, and especially with the new technologies that are here and are developing, we need electricity. And as was stated, I'll be brief on this because you've heard it before, providing so many high-paying jobs, and also giving to the community in so many ways, educationally and so on, and to the nonprofits. And not only here, but the economy that Diablo Canyon provides also affects our state of California. So we need more clean energy, and we need nuclear power. So I'm here to ask you to remember Diablo Canyon Power Plant and continue its operation, and may we all have a good day today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next, Michael Foote. Then it'll be Adam Leverins, Sandy Manich, Elena Tillman, Robin Davidoff.
Hello. My name is Michael Foote. I'm the Director of Economic Development Community Affairs at REACH, a regional economic impact organization with the mission to support economic planning and unlock economic opportunities for San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties. Thank you for spending some time in our region this week and continued work on the critical opportunities for the future of the Central Coast. Over the past few years, we have collaborated with regional, state, and federal partners to advance the state's goals in clean energy, space and aerospace, high tech, while also supporting regional efforts to create accessible career pathways and housing for our workforce. The Central Coast has been a long-standing climate and energy leader, and our efforts have included engaging with broad base of partners on the future of Diablo Canyon, this county's largest private sector employer. We have coordinated with community efforts to plan for long-term future of the site to ensure economic stability, maximize opportunities to lead on clean energy innovation, and as the state evolves its energy ecosystem and advances its climate efforts. In line with SB 846, extended operations of Diablo Canyon have preserved 1,300 good-paying jobs, as well as provided new resources to support clean energy innovation and economic development, land conservation, and tribal celebration. This adds stability to our regional economy and a foundation to build towards the community's future. Thank you for the opportunity to speak and close out public comment locally.
Thank you. And now on to our Zoom speakers. I'll note that we have 19 people signed up to speak on Zoom. We'll start with Adam Leverins. You can go ahead. We have your presentation. We're bringing it up.
Great. Are my audio levels okay?
It's a little loud in the room. We're going to bump you down on our end.
Oh, okay, sorry about that. Adam Leverins providing updates on recent developments from Newport Harbor. Mayor and Council appointed two harbor commissioners in June, and there were four applicants, two of those having earned law degrees. It was suggested that ideas coming out of the Harbor Commission might be more equitable and less discriminatory with some attorneys on the Harbor Commission. Mayor and Council apparently didn't agree with that, as neither of those were seated. On the top of this slide is the applicant of the incumbent who was seated again. And in red, I note a statement from him that says, "I believe that our city owns and operates the most beautiful harbor on the West Coast." The lower portion of the slide is from a city financial report, which, like the Beacon Bay Bill and the granting statutes, and I believe the state constitution, indicate that the city does not own the harbor. And many of the problems here result from the misconception and continued pushing of the idea that the city does own the harbor. Next slide, please. At Harbor Commission in, next slide, please. There we go. At Harbor Commission in June and July, there was a resolution to upgrade the weights for offshore moorings, which is adding weights to the anchors. At Council in June, at Harbor Commission in June and July, I suggested that at the very least, the mooring permittees to be impacted by this should be informed that they, so that they could attend the meetings and share their opinions. Mayor, council, seven harbor commissioners, a city attorney, and a deputy city attorney disagreed. I'm sure Ms. Warren knows more about me on the legalities of that, but even if it isn't unlawful to not tell people you're going to impose restrictions on them, I feel it's improper. The bottom of the page is a quote that we heard from Executive Director Hucklebridge last October in San Diego. She said, speaking of the State Lands Commission, "We were collectively pleased that the city opted to pause its consideration of mooring rate increases and rule changes while the State Lands Commission conducts a review of the city's management of its granted public trust lands." The city has not paused. They made new rules last night, and it continues. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next, Sandy Manich, Elena Tillman, Robin Davidoff. Sandy, go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Sandy Manich. I'd like to thank the committee for allowing me to speak this morning. I am a mooring permit owner in Newport Beach. I have a legal liveaboard permit. I'm also a public school teacher in Orange County in the Orange Unified School District. And as I said, I live on my mooring so that I can afford to live here in Orange County and be a public servant. And as I would like to back up what was just prior stated, that the city was told to stop proceeding with changes to the moorings by the California Coastal Commission last year when they tried to push through a second 200% fee increase in 5 years on the moorings only, where they discriminated and separated out the private piers for no fee increase on the same public water way, on the same body of water. Now, there's some confusion, I believe, I would like to clarify with the California Coastal Commission, because a letter from the commission to the city calls the moorings rentals. I do not have a rental. I have a permit to operate that I purchased. So I'm not really sure what their reference to. Is it a different set of moorings? But in any case, now the city has proposed turning into leases the moorings. They're going ahead with that, even though there's been, they've been ordered to pause until the Coastal Commission reports their findings. Please ensure equity in Newport Beach. The billionaires are paying 200% less taxes than I am as a public teacher with no services on the moorings. That's another issue I'd like to address, the lack of services and the lack of support from the service providers. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Next, Elena Tillman, Robin Davidoff, and Jan Budart. Elena Tillman, we have your videos.
Okay, I'll go ahead and introduce it real quick, if that's okay.
Okay.
Okay. Good morning, commissioners. We're here just last month, and we're here again with an update. There's been no meaningful improvements in enforcement or protection for the sea lions in La Jolla Cove. On any given hour at La Jolla Cove, over 1,000 people crowded into a small beach where the sea lions haul out. Multiply that over 8 hours and you have an unchecked disturbance at a massive scale. Over the holiday weekend alone, city officials estimated over 250,000 visitors to La Jolla, yet there remains no consistent ranger presence, no crowd control, and no mechanism to prevent people from petting, taking selfies with, or blocking access between sea lion mothers and their pups, behavior that has led to documented pup deaths. The city continues to deflect responsibility, claiming that NOAA alone must enforce federal laws, but the MMPA doesn't prevent the city from protecting marine mammals through local measures. It obligates them to. This is not just a policy failure, it's mismanagement with fatal consequences. We urge this commission to hold the city accountable and require immediate, meaningful protections on site. Please now watch this video from the last 10 days. This is just me asking the public to write the city and call. There's another video if you have the time to show it. If not, my colleague Robin Davidoff will be the next speaker.
We're bringing up the second video really quickly.
My narrations aren't on the audio, but these are all examples of the marine mammal protection violation.
Thank you. And next is Robin Davidoff, Jan Budart, Hein Austin. Robin Davidoff, and we have your presentation. We're going to bring it up really quickly. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. This is Robin Davidoff. I'm the Sierra Club Seal Society Chair. Next slide, please. In April, the CCC approved City of San Diego's update to the long-term management plan, allowing rangers staffed at Point La Jolla to monitor the La Jolla Cove, which is just 20 yards away, and use a bullhorn to make announcements to stay back from the sea lions. In June, we showed you a video illustrating San Diego's complete failure to implement the plan. Many of you voiced your concerns and asked the City of San Diego to appear and give an update. It's now July and overcrowding and chaos continues. In short, there's been little to no implementation, as you just saw. Thousands of daily visitors crowd around the sea lions, pet them, and take selfies. And there's deadly consequences, too. Tourists are literally loving the sea lion pups to death. In June, 5 of the 8 sea lion pups born in the cove have died or been abandoned due to human interference. And crowding causes a public safety hazard as people block the beach and the stairs. Next slide, please. The goal of the monitoring plan was to gain compliance and educate visitors to stay a safe distance from the sea lions, and rangers were to monitor the La Jolla Cove and to make public announcements on their bullhorn, and rangers were to create incident reports of harassment if witnessed and send to NOAA enforcement. This isn't happening. Over the past week, a few rangers have come to the cove and made announcements, but it's inconsistent and insufficient for the kind of crowds you just saw. Next slide, please. The city has been reluctant to implement that plan and are waiting for you, the commissioners, to instruct the city to update the long-term plan with a monitoring frequency of every 30 minutes as required by special condition number 3. Tell the rangers to use targeted announcements such as stay 3-car lengths away from the sea lions and record them in multiple languages, and implement an emergency protocol for sick and newborn sea lions using temporary cones and A-frame signs on the beach. And for public safety, temporarily close the gate when sea lions are on the stairs. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is Jan Budart, Hein Austin, and Samantha McDonald. Jan, we're having trouble promoting you in as a panelist. You should now be able to unmute as an attendee. Jan Budart, you should be able to unmute. Okay, I'm not seeing any movement. We're going to keep moving on. Hein Austin, Samantha McDonald, Jennifer Creston. Hein Austin, we have a presentation. Give us a moment to bring it up.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Honorable Commissioners, my name is Hein Austin, and thank you for this opportunity. As you know, the public trust doctrine and transparency are intertwined principles that ensure government accountability and public access to the California tidelands. On July 9, 2024, the City of Newport Beach wanted to adopt a recommendation that would have raised low-cost mooring permits by around 500%. The attorney for the moorings sent a list of objections to the city and to the State Lands Commission that said, "We are hereby submitting objections to the City of Newport Beach's expressed intention to adopt the Harbor Commission's recommendation or the alternative." In response, the State Lands Commission wrote a letter to the city asking it to delay its vote pending an outcome to the harbor permit review. During that time, the city quietly launched a similar alternative license plan that permanently converts low-cost moorings into high-cost mooring licenses, one mooring at a time, in direct violation of the State Lands Commission's request. The city pretends to be in compliance with the State Lands Commission's request, but instead the city is bamboozling the state with this alternative license plan. I ask that you consider investigating this alternative license plan for four reasons. Number one, it lacks the transparency of the CDP brings. Number two, it puts all low-cost coastal access at risk. Number three, it is an alternative plan that is in direct violation of the SLC's ongoing investigation. And four, it discriminates against mooring permits only. The longer this alternative plan goes unchallenged, the harder it will be to address the city's ongoing tidelands rate discrimination violations. Thank you so much for your service.
Thank you. Next, Samantha McDonald, Jennifer Creston, Maura O'Neill. Samantha McDonald.
Hi, my name is Sam McDonald. I am also a liveaboard in Newport Beach. My partner and I just successfully delivered a catamaran across the Atlantic Ocean from Maryland to Portugal. We are sailors, and we really care deeply about the outcomes of your and the State Lands Commission's decisions. I really just want to reiterate, especially for new commissioners, that our ability to live in California depends on the decisions around Newport Beach's ordinance. The ordinance eradicates the liveaboard community by converting all moorings to city licenses without liveaboard capacity. The ordinance also states that a boat that vacates their mooring for more than 25 days can have their mooring permits automatically terminated without appeal. For cruisers like us who spend seasons sailing in Mexico, or our neighbors who have sailed to French Polynesia and back with their families, this is devastating and eradicates that opportunity. The rule goes against everything boats are made to do, and it's a clear act by the city to remove people they deem unworthy of the right to afford to live on the coast. Please reject the conversion of mooring permits to licenses and the overall ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Jennifer Creston, Maura O'Neill, and Marcia Hanscom. Jennifer Creston, we have a video for you. Let us know when you want it to play.
Oh, thank you. Good morning, commissioners. I'm Jennifer Creston. Thank you for allowing me to present this video to you today. It was originally prepared for the State Lands Commission, but I believe it's relevant to the concerns of the Newport Harbor mooring permittees, of which I am one, and I hope to the Coastal Commission as well. And that thing about the sea lions was absolutely horrific, and I'm still trying to recover from it. Thank you very much for paying attention and for listening to this. Video go.
I'm currently helping a friend sail across the ocean for their first time, so I do apologize that I cannot address this committee in person. You've heard me speak before. My name is Dr. Michael Spano, and I am a liveaboard sailor in Newport Beach. I wish I didn't have to keep addressing this committee, but it seems that the city of Newport Beach is determined to push forward with changes that will directly affect my ability to live my life. Me and many other mooring permittees dedicate our lives to a maritime lifestyle. People often reminisce about sailing stories of the past, but the fact of the matter is, those stories never stopped happening. For people of humble origins, like myself, owning a mooring permit is the only way we can keep making these stories happen. The city of Newport Beach often vilifies mooring permittees and the Newport Beach Mooring Association, but from our perspective, we are the targets of systematic oppression and discrimination by a local government. I bought this permit with my entire life savings because it was enshrined in federal nautical charts, state charter, and municipal code. I paid sales taxes on it directly to Newport Beach and recognized my permit in public notary. It feels like everything that the Harbor Commission and City Council do regarding moorings is to erode our rights one way or another, often disguised as improvements. I'm sick of all these charades, and I'm asking you, the state agency that granted these tidelands, to demand equal treatment among mooring permittees and pier permittees. Why is it that so much of the city's efforts regarding improvements around the harbor are to reduce my access to the water? These tidelands are not theirs, they are ours, the peoples of California. The tidelands are not a business, they are a legacy. And it's past due for the state to make this fact abundantly clear to the city of Newport Beach. Thank you for listening to my opinion yet again on this matter.
Thank you. Next is Maura O'Neill, Marsha Hanscom, and then Brett Garrett. Maura.
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you. My name is Maura O'Neill. I'm a policy analyst for Better Neighbors LA, a coalition of hosts, tenants, housing activists, and community members who conduct data analysis and research on the short-term rental industry, including in the coastal zone where we advocate for regulating short-term rentals through true home sharing to balance coastal access and long-term housing needs. I'm here today to offer general public comment on short-term rental regulations in the coastal zone by highlighting recent international developments that show a potential regulatory path forward for California, one that maintains access to public access to the coast while protecting long-term housing. Spain and California share more than a Mediterranean climate and a love of good olive oil. Both face an escalating crisis made worse by the proliferation of short-term rentals. Similar to the findings in the Walksmooth study heard by this commission, an autonomous University of Barcelona report found that in Barcelona neighborhoods with a higher concentration of short-term rentals, rents were increased by 8% and home prices by 19%. One way that Spain is addressing its housing crisis is by reducing the number of short-term rentals. In 2017, Barcelona adopted strict short-term rental registration requirements, including a centralized electronic registry. The city also stopped permitting short-term rentals in areas facing intense housing pressures. As a result, the number of illegal short-term rentals dropped by over 68% over 5 years. Despite the regulations, the city still welcomed over 15 million tourists both in 2023 and 2024. We share this update with the commission since it's indicated that short-term rentals and their impact on housing is an area of concern. Better Neighbors LA urges the commission to require coastal cities to implement strong, enforceable, hosted-only policies that preserve affordable access to the coast and long-term housing. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. I'd just like to announce that we have 5 more people that we're able to find. That's our last 5 people. Marsha Hanscom, followed by Brett Garrett and Timothy Robinson. Marsha Hanscom.
I do have a, before you start the clock, I do have a brief, yes. Could you please play that? And then I will speak.
Regarding the excavation of a pipe, you don't do that anymore. You fill it up with cement slurry and cut off the risers so that they do not obstruct the surface. You do not have to remove the whole thing. Fill it up with cement slurry.
Please do not remove the drains right now. I agree with that. Don't remove them in 5 years. They shouldn't be removed at all. Maybe what Dr. Williams suggested of filling in with the cement makes more sense. But definitely bringing in heavy equipment to extricate these drains that never should have been put there, that's just wrong.
This is a very interesting argument from some of the public testimony at the end, talking about it's less harmful to keep the pipes there and just fill them in as opposed to do all the bulldozing and taking it out. And I do want to do the most environmentally friendly thing.
And you can see here later this month, the Wildlife Conservation Board is contemplating another $1 million of public money to go to CDFW to bring in heavy equipment that we do not agree should happen. You can see the yellow lines there. That's the incredible amount of habitat that will be disturbed. So, I'm Marsha Hanscom with Defend Biona Wetlands and Coastal Lands Action Network. I just wanted to say thank you to you for finally hearing us.
You know, the public advocates actually saved $500,000 in state money and reduced impact to native habitat. But we had to keep repeating ourselves for almost 5 years before CDFW listened out of necessity. They're not allowed to use that money for a violation. So I want to thank you for what you did last month at the Biona Wetlands on the Los Angeles coast. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Brett Garrett, Timothy Robinson, Julia Chun here, and then last will be Juan Lares. Brett Garrett, go ahead.
Good morning. I am Brett Garrett in Santa Cruz, calling to oppose the nuclear power facility at Diablo Canyon. Please do not rubber stamp Diablo Canyon to continue without a formal hearing and thorough analysis regarding the risks and coastal impacts of this facility. Nobody really knows how to safely dispose of Diablo Canyon's nuclear waste, especially since the area includes multiple earthquake fault lines. Worse than ordinary fault lines, they are thrust faults, creating a huge risk of earthquakes and tsunamis. The once-through cooling system is warming ocean waters, harming protective native species such as black abalone. I believe the Coastal Commission probably would have rejected this system a long time ago if not for the false promise that Diablo Canyon was to be shut down in 2025. Yesterday, I was shocked to hear commenters claiming that PG&E is a proven environmental steward with an exemplary safety record. That's not reality. Everybody knows about the 2010 San Bruno gas explosion that caused 8 deaths and 6 felony convictions for PG&E. Everybody knows the City of Paradise was destroyed in a fire caused by PG&E's negligence, and more PG&E fires have followed since then. Here in Santa Cruz County, PG&E cuts down trees instead of maintaining PG&E infrastructure. So don't believe anyone who says PG&E is a good environmental steward. Can we trust PG&E to safely operate a nuclear power facility? Of course not. They don't even test for embrittlement. Furthermore, heaven forbid, if we have an actual meltdown, we can't expect any help from what's left of FEMA under an administration that wants to punish California. So I urge you, heed the lessons of Three Mile Island and Fukushima. Please hold formal hearings and a thorough analysis regarding the risks and coastal impacts of the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, Timothy Robinson, Julia Chun here, and then Juan Lares.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear and see you.
Okay, great. My name's Tim Robinson, and my family owns the adjacent property to the proposed project at 501 Sandpoint Road in Carpinteria in southern Santa Barbara County that you will be discussing in closed session this meeting. My family has owned that property since 1970. I have a PhD in environmental science and wrote a dissertation on the watersheds of the Carpinteria salt marsh. I have extensive long-term personal and professional experience in the area. I have watched the subject project shrink in size over my lifetime to the point of being mostly consumed by the estuary with upland dune mat habitat. Normally, I am aligned with the Coastal Commission in their mission and case determination, but in this case of this proposed project at 501 Sandpoint, I was shocked and very disappointed the Commission voted 6-3 in favor of the project going forward. Their reason for approval was flawed, and the list of conditions were insufficient for the level of impact to the extremely sensitive wetland habitat, to the neighboring property, and to the Sandpoint Road community. As the Commission acknowledged, it is a terrible location for development that goes against the Coastal Act and sensitive coastal land preservation. The impact on the adjacent property at 539 Sandpoint Road is going to be severe. Next slide. Okay, so there you can see where the proposed project is going to be, and our house is right to the right. The impact to the project on 539 Sandpoint is going to be severe. From our kitchen to the center of the easement road to the subject property is about 20 to 25 feet. Next slide. Every small and large vehicle that goes to that property will feel like you're traveling through your personal space. This first slide here shows a SCAP semi-truck going to the project site. Just this last week, And the next slide, please, shows a drilling that's out on that property. So in closing, I request that the commission reconsider their ruling adding in more conditions that sufficiently mitigate the potential impacts of the project to neighboring communities and the salt marsh. Thank you for your time and consideration of my comment.
Thank you. Julia Chun here, Juan Lares. Julian Chun here, go ahead.
I'm Julia Chen here with the California Coastal Protection Network, a unique advocacy organization dedicated to protecting California's greatest natural asset, our magnificent 1,100-mile coastline for all generations. Offshore wind holds promise to help California meet its renewable energy goals, decrease greenhouse gas emissions, and curtail the impacts of climate change. However, this new industrial use of the coast and ocean must be implemented responsibly with conservation priorities at the forefront. Negative impacts need to be avoided, minimized, and mitigated to the fullest extent possible. CCPN supports offshore wind to reduce greenhouse gas emissions when projects are designed, planned, and sited to avoid negative impacts to marine life, coastal resources, and coastal communities, especially those of Native American tribes and constituents that have already borne disproportionate burdens from past pollution and industrial development. We are confident that the Coastal Commission and sister agencies will address the concerns surrounding floating offshore wind based on the best available science. And we look forward to the interagency coordination efforts. I did want to point out that the BOEM quote mentioned earlier was taken out of context, and I can send information supporting that fact to the staff if needed. We do need to remain curious and open and learn more. Other parts of the world are implementing offshore wind and choosing to expand. Even if we just look at new energy demand, I certainly hope that comes from new clean renewable sources and not increase reliance on fossil fuels. Oil spills alone are reason enough not to rely on fossil fuels. Thank you for your time today and your continued service.
Thank you. Juan Lares, and then after Juan, I will call a few names that we weren't able to find and ask you to raise your hands. But go ahead, Juan Lares.
Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. Thank you for your time and consideration of comments today. My name is Juan Lares. I'm a Ventura County resident and lifelong coastal Californian. I currently serve as the project director of the Central Coast Climate Justice Network. We're a coalition advancing just, community-led, guided, and informed climate energy solutions across Ventura, Santa Barbara, and San Luis Obispo counties. I'm here today to speak in support of responsible offshore wind development. This isn't just about infrastructure. About building a future that includes working families, indigenous communities, and all of us along the coast. We have a generational opportunity to shape clean, domestic energy in a way that delivers lasting, community-driven benefits. That includes creating family-sustaining union jobs, engaging tribes, and frontline communities early and often, and protecting our marine ecosystems through strong oversight. With growing energy needs, as many have mentioned, we must be realistic and proactive. Planning now for the future we know is coming, offshore wind offers a path to reduce our dependence on fossil fuels, prevent further future harm to communities such as those in Oxnard, which has long shouldered the burden of polluting existing energy infrastructure like that of the Ormond Beach Generating Station. While some have raised concerns about the visual impacts of offshore wind, I understand those concerns. But I ask us to weigh them against the long-term damage of extractive energy industries, like the devastation caused by the 2015 Refugio oil spill. The risk of inaction are far greater. With a background in environmental science, focused on natural resource management and conservation, I approach offshore wind development with deep respect for both ecological systems and community resilience. I am not naive. This transition will require fossil fuels in the short term, but we cannot move beyond without investing in viable, just alternatives. Offshore wind, done right, can be one of them. Thank you for your leadership, your commitment to public participation, and your continued efforts to protect and steward California's coast for all who call it home. While I know some have had to leave, I invite everyone who supports a just and equitable sustainable energy future by supporting offshore wind to raise their hand or stand up. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you. I'm now going to call names that we have signed up but we aren't able to find in Zoom. If you hear your name, please raise your hand. Jan Boudart, Claudia Harmon-Worthen, Brenda Auer, Matthew Simmons, David Reichart, Peter Wiener. Jan Boudart, we're going to try you again. We had you earlier. but we weren't able to get you unmuted. Jan, you should be able to unmute. Okay, there you go.
I'm Jan Boudar, but I need a minute. I just got here. I need a minute to find my little speech, and I'm wondering if you could put me off until the next person.
Okay, we do have one other hand raised. We'll come right back to you.
Thank you.
We have the name iPad. Please state your name. You can unmute and state your name.
My name is Tom Peer.
We don't have a sign up under that name, so unfortunately we're going to try Jan again when you are ready. You should be able to unmute and begin when you have the opportunity.
I'm not going to be ready for just a few more minutes. I'm sorry.
Okay, then we need to keep moving on then. Unfortunately. Madam Chair.
Any more speakers?
There's no one else.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you so much to the public for all of your comments. I'll bring it back to the commission. Any questions? Commissioner Kelly.
Thank you. I had a question for staff regarding some of the comments with the La Jolla Beach and where things stand with concerns about the safety of both the visitors and the sea lions and the pups that we heard about. I know this has been an ongoing conversation, so I just am wondering if we have a staff update, and it sounds like the concerns are continuing and the concerning behavior is continuing, and especially during the summer months when we're seeing a lot of visitors to the San Diego area. I'm growing increasingly concerned that the response and kind of our communication towards La Jolla or the city or whomever is responsible maybe is falling on deaf ears, but hopefully that's not the case. Do you have any information for us?
Thank you, through the chair. So you may recall at the last commission hearing, Commissioner O'Malley had offered to engage on this whole issue directly with the city, and at this point he is actively doing so. I don't have anything specific to report today, but I do expect we will have some for the next hearing.
Thank you, and through the chair, would it be possible if we could formally ask for an update next month from the folks at the City of San Diego or from Commissioner O'Malley or both?
We can certainly make the request.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, I'm gonna suggest, Commissioner Jackson.
Sorry, I'm a little slow to the punch here. I appreciate the comments about the short-term rentals and what some European countries are doing because of the unbridled takeover, so to speak, of a lot of municipalities, particularly coastal cities, and the never-ending tension between the housing as well as affordable accommodation. So, it's certainly something we need to continue to look at, so I appreciate that comment. And I had a question about the mooring issue in Newport, and when is that coming back and how is that coming back? Because one of the things the speaker mentioned, she owned a mooring. So I just did a quick Google search, and Newport Beach says it's a misnomer. It's not ownership, but it's a lease. But then that lease is then transferable. And so I just did a quick Google search, and the transferals are, you know, $47,000, $62,000, $47,000 of an existing lease. So I was just kind of curious about that. And is that going to be a part of our discussion when this comes back?
Again, through the chair. Some of the issues that were brought up today are ones that, you know, we were directly contacted about as well, and we did reach out to the city and are awaiting some feedback. But our expectation about all these changes that are being discussed was that they were paused, and that's our continued expectation. But whether that's actually happening, I'm not certain of at this point. So we are, again, reaching out to the city to discuss that. In terms of the way that comes back to the commission, I don't think we have that determined at this point in time. We are, of course, expecting, and again, the reason for the pause was for the State Lands Commission to complete their review of, the city's mooring program and other tidelands issues. And so we were waiting for that to be completed, and then would be determining our next steps.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Okay, so I'm going to suggest we take a very quick break and then come back and try to power through the rest of the very short agenda. So I'll see everyone back here right around 11:10, please. Thank you. Okay, thank you all. We will now move on, I believe, to the administrative calendar.
Thank you, Chair Harmon. So yes, that does take us to item 5, the administrative calendar for all districts and units on the agenda today. There's two projects from Huntington Beach and one from Newport Beach. Conditions are acceptable to the applicants. There's no known opposition. So on this item, we're looking for whether four or more commissioners object to the issuance of these administrative permits.
Thank you, Mr. Schwing. Are there any speakers on any of these items?
We have one speaker signed up, Susan Kirks, but we're not seeing them in the Zoom meeting. Susan, if you're in the meeting, please raise your hand. Okay, I'm not seeing Susan Kirks.
Okay, thank you. Do any commissioners wish to remove an item from the administrative calendar? Seeing none, the items were approved. Thank you. Now we will move on to the consent calendar, please.
Thank you. And again, this is for all units and districts on the agenda. There's one item from San Diego. Staff would note that this matter, this project is replacing 8 existing residential units, none of which were deemed affordable, with 13 new residential units, 2 of which will be made affordable. We aren't aware of any controversy on these items, and applicants are in agreement with staff recommendations. So staff recommends approval of that matter on consent.
Thank you very much. Are there any ex partes to report? Seeing none. Any members of the public who wish to speak on this item?
No, we just have one available for questions.
Thank you very much. Does anyone wish to remove the item? If not, I will take a motion to approve.
Lopez moves.
I'll second, and good to see making it easier to build denser housing in the coastal zone.
Thank you. Thank you. That's a motion by Commissioner Lopez, seconded by Commissioner Nodoff. Any objection to unanimous consent? Seeing none, the consent calendar is adopted, and we'll move to those items that have been removed from the regular calendar to consent, please.
Thank you. And again, we have 8 items that we're recommending, starting with item 9A, application 2364. That's State Park, Story Pines Reserve, Comfort Station. Item 10A, that's the Moss application, 616-340A3. Item 12A, that's City of Newport Beach's LCP amendment on accessory encroachments. Item 14A, application 52520, that's Orange County Public Works Ocean Outlet Maintenance permit. Item 18A, Santa Cruz County's well and water system updates LCP amendment. Item 18B, Santa Cruz's cannabis update and produce stand changes LCP amendment. Item 18C, the City of Santa Cruz's homeless garden project site certification. And item 18D, San Luis Obispo County's cannabis update. There are addenda on items 9A, 10A, and 14A with various clarifications and corrections to the special conditions and findings, and in some instances, just responding to correspondence. However, there's no opposition or objections known on any of these items. I do want to note that on item 18C, this is an amendment that certifies LCP provisions for an area within the City of Santa Cruz that was historically been in an area of deferred LCP certification. or an ADC. So we're always looking for opportunities to close ADCs in LCPs, and we appreciate the collaboration with the city to do this in this case. I also just want to note, although we're moving quite a number of items to consent today, there's a tremendous amount of work involved with each one of these items, and we do appreciate the collaboration from the applicants and the agencies involved and the stakeholders and the very hard work of our staff on each one of these items. So, and with that, we're recommending these adders get moved to the consent calendar and approved per the staff recommendations.
Thank you very much. We echo that appreciation. Thank you. I'll start by reporting my own ex parte on item 12A. It was this morning around 8:40 for less than 5 minutes with Don Schmitz and Liz Westmoreland from the City of Newport Beach. They indicated their appreciation for staff's collaborative efforts and that the process was so successful, and their gratitude that this is moving forward. Does anyone else have any ex partes to report?
Madam Chair, I was approached to meet on item 12A, and I took no action.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any members of the public who'd like to speak on any of these items?
Yes, we have across the items about 8 speakers and a bunch available for questions. I'm going to go through each item, move to consent. For item 9A, move to consent. We have 3 from Parks available for questions. For item 10A, move to consent, we have 1 speaker, Mitch Silverstein from Surfrider. Mitch, give us a moment while we bring you in. And then for 10A, we also have a representative for the applicant available for questions. And then Mitch, we have your presentation. Give us a moment to bring that up. And go ahead.
Thanks. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Great. Mitch Silverstein, Senior Policy Coordinator for Surfrider Foundation in San Diego County. The item moved to consent deals with the following. Next slide, please. A CDP amendment wherein the property owners of a Carlsbad blufftop home have agreed to remove unpermitted bluff retaining walls and restore a pre-coastal ag private staircase. The bluff retaining walls were installed in direct conflict to the CDP for their home. This is definitely a positive development to bring this home back into accordance with the Coastal Act, and Surfrider supports it. Next slide. However, what's not being addressed today is the property owner's unpermitted rock revetment. These rocks were illegally placed on the beach in the early 1980s, over 40 years ago, and remain unaddressed today. Next slide. I understand the revetment was not part of today's item, and I'm very supportive of restoring the unpermitted development on this property's upper bluff. But these violations are relatively recent and do not directly affect public beach access. Meanwhile, the longstanding violation on the beach has direct negative impacts to beach, both lateral access and sand supply. As this image shows, there is no dry beach in front of this house at a 3.3-foot tide, in part due to these rocks stopping natural bluff erosion. Next slide. In this image, you can clearly see that there's dry sandy beach directly to the south where the bluffs are unarmored and have been allowed to erode naturally. Next slide. So I end with 2 asks of the commission on behalf of Surfrider San Diego County Chapter. First, looking back to 2016 when the CDP to build this house was approved, the applicant was allowed to build a new structure without being required to remove this harmful illegal revetment. This directly contradicts Coastal Act Section 30235 and Carlsbad's LCP, both which expressly forbid new development to rely on shoreline armoring. Please don't allow a similar situation to occur again. And secondly, please address this existing unpermitted revetment as soon as possible. 40 years is a long time for it to remain unresolved with zero consequences or mitigation by the property owner. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there no more speakers for item 10A? Item 12A, move to consent. We have in person Liz Westmoreland and Don Schmitz. Okay. Next, moving on to item 14A, move to consent, Giles Matthews in person.
Hi, good morning. I'm Giles Matthews. I represent Orange County Public Works, the applicant. I just wanted to, I'm mainly here for questions, if you've got any, to respond to any public comments, but We've worked with Carl's team, with all the scientists and things, and we've got a much more improved permit outcome, much better environmental outcomes over this, and just really want to say gratitude to Carl's team for, you know, working through this. We've had a very productive process with it, and we've got working with NGOs, all the wildlife agencies, to make sure we've got and the wildlife is protected, the public's protected, and everything while we're doing the work, and we maintain our flood provision. But really, just any questions, let me know. Any response from any of the other public, I'm here to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you. We do have a couple more people signed up for item 14A, Dan Silver and Scott Thomas. Scott Thomas, we're not seeing you in the Zoom meeting. Can you please raise your hand so we can find you? And then Dan Silver, go ahead.
Good morning, Chair, Honorable Commissioners. Dan Silver, Endangered Habitats League in Los Angeles. And I'm also able to testify on behalf of Sea and Sage Audubon Society if Scott can't make it. We are here to support this multifaceted permit, which will allow much better channel maintenance, which will improve the ecological health of the estuary. The Outlets Project is also being coordinated with both U.S. Fish and Wildlife and California Fish and Wildlife. We appreciate the attention to shorebirds, to grunion, and to other natural resources, and generally appreciate the very constructive approach of Orange County Public Works and the Commission in working towards environmental goals. We hope to work in the future with Public Works and your commission on in this area. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we are not seeing Scott Thomas. So moving on to the next item, move to consent 18A. We have one person from the County of Santa Cruz available for questions. And then moving on to item 18C, move to consent. We have also someone from Santa Cruz County available for questions, and then Doug Engfer, who is signed up to speak. So, Doug, you're being moved in as a panelist. And when you're able to, please unmute and begin.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you. Chair Harmon and members of the commission, my name is Doug Engfer. I serve on the board of the Homeless Garden Project, currently as its vice president. I speak today on behalf of our team. The project strongly supports staff's recommended actions regarding item 18C, the City of Santa Cruz's proposed local postal program amendment to designate the northern 4 acres at 2395 Delaware Avenue for long-term agricultural use. We're pleased that the city and commission staff have developed a proposal that upholds the Coastal Act's goals of agricultural resource protection, environmental stewardship, and responsible, sustainable land use practices. This proposed amendment preserves the longstanding agricultural nature of this site and, subject to the city's LCP and creeks and wetlands policies, protects sensitive resources. This land's been farmed continuously for about 100 years, including the project's nearly 30 years of tenancy here. Designating this site as agricultural grazing and zoning it as an agricultural district aligns with the LCP's intent to maintain the city's urban-rural boundary, prevent sprawl, and support sustainable land use practices. Our low-impact regenerative farming approach is well-suited to this location and provides a model for how agriculture, social enterprise, and environmental integrity can coexist. We urge the commission to approve this amendment as submitted and help secure the future of our organization and the land we've so carefully tended. Derry Ganshorn, our executive director, Ron Swenson, the property owner, and I are available to answer any questions you may have. As always, thank you for your time, consideration, and service.
Thank you. We had one other person sign up to speak for item 18C, Sandy Brown, but we are not seeing you in the Zoom meeting. Sandy Brown, if you're in the meeting, please raise your hand. I'm seeing no hands raised. Madam Chair, that concludes the speakers for the items moved to consent.
Thank you, Chris. May I ask staff to please respond to the public comment by Surf Rider?
That's Surf Rider's comments were correct in terms of this permit amendment is limited to the violations related to the the retaining walls and removal of those, so it resolves that issue. As far as the revetment component, that's not part of the amendment that's in front of the commission today. It is an ongoing concern, and it is something that our enforcement department is working on.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Escalante.
Thank you, Chair. And just real quick observation, because, you know, I appreciate Surf Riders just consistently showing us these images of the reality of beach loss with this armoring, you know, across the state. So, you know, it's just images speak louder than words, and I appreciate you guys making the effort to show this. Thanks.
Okay. Does anyone wish to remove an item from the consent calendar? Seeing none, may I have a motion and a second?
Move consent.
Okay, that is a motion by Commissioner Wilson, a second by Commissioner Escalante. Any objections to unanimous consent? Seeing none, the consent calendar is so adopted. And we'll move on to the DDR from the San Diego coast, please.
Thank you. So in our Deputy Director's report for San Diego Coast District, we're reporting completion of an LCP amendment certification for the City of Coronado's housing element update. Here, the Executive Directors determined the City's action is legally adequate to complete the certification process. We're also reporting two waivers and one CDP amendment for projects in San Diego and Solana Beach. No known opposition on those. So we're asking whether three or more commissioners object to the waivers, the amendment, or the amendment in this case.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes to report? Seeing none, any speakers on the DDR?
No, we only have three available for questions.
Great, thank you. Do three or more commissioners object to any item on the deputy director's report? Seeing none, the commission concurs. Thank you. And that brings us to item 11, I think, which is the South Coast District's Deputy Director's Report.
Yes, that's correct. So here again, we're reporting four waivers for projects in Sunset Beach and San Clemente, and three CDP extensions and one CDP amendment. Again, no known opposition on any of these items, and we're asking whether three or more commissioners object to the waivers, extensions, or the amendment.
Thank you. Any ex partes? And how about public comment?
There are no speakers for this item.
Thank you. Do three or more commissioners object to any item in the report? Seeing no objections, the commission concurs. Thank you. And now we will move to item 13. Thank you.
Yes, that's correct. And there is a staff PowerPoint on this item, if we could get that brought up. And Vince Lee with our Long Beach office is going to do the staff presentation on this item. Vince, whenever you're ready, please begin.
Thank you, Carl. Hello, commissioners. Item 13A is an appeal filed on behalf of the commission of a coastal development permit granted by the City of Dana Point to Roland Sanson. Slide, please. The subject site is a blufftop lot located within the Nugal Shores residential community and sits atop a massive landslide complex that affects nearly 1 mile of coastline north of the Dana Point headlands. The landslide complex reaches a depth of nearly 40 feet below sea level and encompasses the first three rows of homes directly landward of a rock revetment within the Nugal Shores community. Therefore, the bluff is impacted by the landslide complex that underlies a significant portion of the neighborhood, and the stability of the site of the project site depends on in part of the Nugal on the Nugal Shores revetment that the Orange County Parks maintains. The project site is developed with a two-story, 3,820 square feet single-family dwelling constructed in 1974, a landscaped slope descending to a private walkway is located at the rear of the property, which abuts the Pacific Ocean and the Dana Strands Beach. The city-approved project authorizes the addition and remodel to the subject single-family residence property, a 364 square feet portion of the second floor deck would be enclosed to construct an addition on the seaward side of the house. Site improvements also include development directly on the bluff face, including deck expansions, new retaining walls, relocation and expansion of existing private stairs, a new spa, and a fire pit. The Commission's standard of review for the proposed development is the City of Dana Point's certified LCP and the Chapter 3 Public Access and Recreation Policies of the Coastal Act. Next slide. The appellants contend that the city-approved project raises issues as to consistency with the coastal hazard policies of the LCP. Specifically, the appellants contend that the project raises broader concerns about enlarging and extending the economic life of structures in a hazardous area, does not include sufficient geotechnical information to assure that the proposed development is sited and designed to minimize risk to life and property in this area of high geologic hazard. It does not minimize landform alteration, and it does not require waiver of future shoreline protection and does not assume the risk of new development at a hazardous location. Staff believes that these appeal contentions raise a substantial issue as to whether the project is consistent with coastal hazard policies of the certified LCP. And the second contention is that the appellants contend that the project directly on the bluff slope are inconsistent with the development standard policies of the LCP. These include substantial alterations to the existing private staircase descending down the bluff face, a new retaining wall to support the stairs, deck expansions, cantilevered seaward of the bluff edge, and a new spa within the coastal bluff setback area. In this case, too, staff believes the appeal contentions do raise a substantial issue as to whether the project is consistent with development standards found in the certified LCP. Next slide. Therefore, staff recommends that the Commission determine that a substantial issue exists with respect to the grounds on which the appeal has been filed, because the project, as approved by the City of Dana Point, has not been adequately reviewed for consistency with Chapter 3 of the Coastal Act and the certified LCP policies. Unless three or more commissioners wish to hold a hearing on the substantial issue determination, substantial issue will be deemed to exist, and we will move on to the Commission's de novo action on this item.
Thank you, Mr. Lee. Are there any ex partes to report? Seeing none, do three or more commissioners wish to have a hearing on substantial issue? No. Substantial issue has been found. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Next slide, please.
Thank you.
So we will now move on to the de novo CDP application for the project. We'll keep this presentation brief as we understand that the applicant is in agreement with staff's recommendation and there is no non-opposition to this project. So after consultation with commission staff, the applicant has revised his proposal to remove the proposed improvements to the bluff slope, which are deck expansions, new retaining walls, relocation and expansion of the existing private stairs, a new spa, and the fire pit. Therefore, the revised proposal before the commission's de novo permit hearing only includes constructing a new addition by enclosing the 364 square feet second floor deck to add living space on the seaward side within the existing footprint of the house. Footprint of the house, and then four new deepened pad footings to support the added living space, and also repairs to the existing deck and new landscaping. So with the reduced project scope that removed development directly on the bluff slope, the applicant's structure engineer submitted an opinion letter clarifying that the increased gravity loads in this area for the proposed living space addition will be negligible. The commission staff, coastal engineer, and geologist reviewed this opinion letter and determined that the proposed living space addition should not significantly impact the stability of the slope. Staff also believes that the project, with its reduced scope from the city-approved project, is not a major remodel or redevelopment as defined in the LCP, and that the second-story living space addition and the deck repair would not materially increase the degree of nonconformity of the structure with respect to geologic stability or extend the economic life of the existing structure. Next slide, please. Therefore, staff recommends that the Commission approve the de novo permit as revised with five special conditions, and the motion can be found on page 14 of the staff report. This concludes staff presentation, and we are available for questions.
Great, thank you very much. Now we'll open the public hearing and I'll turn it to the applicant if they're available.
Yes, we have the applicant, Ronald Sanson,
as well as the representative for Ronald, David Bailey. And they're both on Zoom.
Mr. Sanson, how much time would you like?
And give it a second.
Can you hear me?
Yes, yes. We can.
I'm okay with staff's recommendations. I mean, I would like to make the stairs, and it was a recommendation by the Dana Point Building Department, is to bring the stairs up to code. They're not code compliant. The Coastal Commission's prefer I not touch them. My neighbors have turned theirs to be code compliant, but it was before, you know, many years ago. The tread and the risers don't comply. They're very, very thin. It's easy to fall. But I'm okay leaving them as they are. They've been there 50 years. But I would, if for some reason something changes, somebody should notify me. I'm happy to spend the money to bring the stairs to be code compliant. Other than that, I'm good with staff's recommendation.
Great. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Are there any speakers who...
We also had David Bailey.
Good afternoon or good morning, everybody. I'm David Bailey. I'm the architect for the project. And we just want to say thanks to Vince and the commission for helping us move our project along. Mr. Sanson, as he mentioned, he agrees with all the conditions, and we're hoping to get this resolved today. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Any public comments on this item?
And there are no other commenters on this item.
Wonderful. Thank you. I'll bring it back to the commission for... Oh, yes, yeah. Commissioner Lohmberg.
Can I just ask staff why not let the applicant replace the stairs? Is there a substantive reason?
Well, we're not under any understanding that the city's requiring that at this point. What was in front of us was more than just, you know, work on the stairs. There was a deck and spa and all kinds of development associated on that slope, on the bluff face, essentially. And those changes are plainly inconsistent with the city's LCP. So the applicant simply revised the project to not do any further work on the stairs. And so that's what's in front of us today, is just the work on the house.
So the applicant could come back and ask for that?
They could. We'd have to see what the scope of work on that is. Usually, you know, if there's some limited amount of work that they need to do to the stairs to make them safe, you know, repair and maintenance, essentially, that's something that could be considered.
Thank you. Any further comments, questions, or a motion?
I'm prepared to move.
Thank you.
I'll second.
I want to make a comment, brief comment.
I move that the Commission approve Coastal Development Permit Application Number A-5-DPT-22-0066 pursuant to the staff recommendation, and staff recommends a yes vote.
And I will second, and as one of the appellants, I just want to thank staff so much for their work on this, and also the applicant for getting this resolved, and just really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So that was moved by Commissioner Nadoff, seconded by Vice Chair Hart. Are there any objections to a unanimous yes vote? Seeing no objections, the permit is approved. Thank you. Now we will move on to item 15A.
Thank you. Again, there is just a brief staff PowerPoint on this item, and Jeff Palm with our Long Beach office is going to do the staff presentation on this matter. Jeff, when you're ready.
All right, good morning, commissioners. Item 15A is the hearing for revised findings on CDP 5-23-0753. On February 5th, 2025, the commission denied the subject CDP application by a vote of 9-1. Because the commission action differed from the staff recommendation on the CDP application, the staff report for this item contains revisions to reflect the commission's action. If approved by the commission, the proposed revisions will be incorporated into the adopted findings. Commissioners who are eligible to vote on the revised findings are those from the prevailing side who are present at the February 5th, 2025 hearing, including Commissioners Hart, Lohmberg, Nadoff, Trumbull-Sanders, Bochco, and Escalante. Notice of today's hearing for the revised findings was sent to all of the interested parties that were previously notified of the Commission's hearing in February on the CDP application. To date, Commission staff have received 3 letters on the revised findings, which are included in a correspondence packet for this item. The notice that was sent to interested parties for today's hearing specified that the Commission will only take testimony about whether the revised findings reflect the Commission's February decision. The majority of comments received by Commission staff did not raise an issue whether the revised findings reflect the Commission's February decision and therefore were not addressed in the addendum. The addendum also includes 1 minor revision to the staff report to improve clarity. Additionally, Commission staff would note that interested parties providing oral testimony today should similarly limit their comments to whether the revised findings reflect the Commission's February decision. Staff recommends that the Commission adopt the revised findings for the Commission's February 5th, 2025 action on the subject CDP application. The motion and resolution can be found on page 6 of the staff report. This concludes staff presentation, and staff is available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any public comments on this item?
Yes, we have 2 speakers signed up, Adam Leverins and Thomas Peer. Thomas Peer, we're not seeing you in the Zoom meeting. Could you please raise your hand so we can find you? Adam Leverins, we're bringing you in right now. Adam Leverins. We see that you're unmuted. You can go ahead.
Okay. Thank you again. And in the letter to Mr. Palm that I had submitted, I didn't want to create any more work for staff or you folks. We remain incredibly grateful to the commissioners who voted this down on February 5th. I just wanted to point out some inaccuracies from the applicant, which I have done so hopefully through the attachment of the letters to the record. I'd encourage commissioners to read those. You're surely going to see additional applications from the city of Newport Beach. And the inaccuracies, I think, create all kinds of work for you folks, the staff, for us. And I just encourage more accuracy in the future. And as I noted earlier, this too, I would say, not reflective of a city pause. This would have made a bunch of substantial changes to rules and rates. And I just encourage the city to actually pause so we can quit complaining. And thank you again for all you folks do. Take care. Bye.
Thank you. And then we do have Thomas Peer. That was the iPad earlier. Thomas, you can unmute and begin. Thomas, you should be able to unmute.
Unmute. How's that?
There you go. We can hear you.
Very well. Thank you very much. My name is Tom Peer. I've been held a mooring in the sea field for approximately 35 years. Been a resident of Newport Beach on and off since about 1962. I'm also the chair of the Boating and Waterways Commission, so greetings to all my fellow commissioners. And first off, I just wanted to answer a question from a commissioner earlier, which is that, yes, the permittees are permittees. They also own the ground tackle and the chain,
sir,
and everything associated with that.
To the accuracy of the findings and whether they reflect the February hearing. Thank you.
Okay. All right. That's fine. I was just trying to assist one of your commissioners who may have had a question.
Thank you.
But regardless, I do agree with the accuracy. And I want to just commend staff for coming down on the right side of this issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Okay, from among the commissioners eligible to vote, I will accept a motion or questions or comments.
I can move to adopt the revised findings.
Second.
Okay, it's moved by Vice Chair Hart, seconded by Commissioner Nodoff, and I'll ask for a roll call vote, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Bochco?
Yes.
Bochco, yes. Commissioner Escalante?
Yes.
Yes. Commissioner Hart?
Yes.
Hart, yes. Commissioner Jackson?
Aye.
Jackson.
He can't. He's not eligible to vote.
Commissioner Kelly?
So, Chris, the only remaining commissioners who are eligible to vote are Loewenberg, Nothoff, and Turnbull-Sanders.
Okay. Sorry about that. Commissioner Loewenberg?
Yes.
Loewenberg, yes. Commissioner Nothoff?
Aye.
Nothoff, yes. And then Commissioner Turnbull-Sanders?
Yes.
Yes. The vote is 6 yes, 0 no.
Great. The revised findings are so adopted. Thank you. And we'll move on to items.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Forward. Madam Chair, I'd like in the future when some of us aren't able to participate or be part of a voting process, so I realize there's a process. We need clarifications. I'm new, so I don't understand the entire process, and so it'd just be helpful and also helpful to the public to know why a limited number of the commission is able to participate in the vote.
Sure. Why don't we ask our counsel to give a brief overview? Thank you, Ms. Warren.
Absolutely. This is somewhat unusual circumstances, but the commission's regulations require that when the commission takes a vote on an item that is substantially different than the staff recommendation, then the staff is required to take the comments that the commissioners on the prevailing side made in that hearing, and to prepare revised findings that reflect the reasons why the commissioners voted the way that they did. So when these revised findings are taken back to the commission for action, it's the commissioners who voted in favor of the findings. Sometimes it's not in favor of the project, that's why I'm hesitating here, but the commissioners on the prevailing side of the vote at the original hearing, the findings are supposed to reflect their reasons for voting the way that they did, which is why they are the only people who can vote on them, because they're the ones who articulated why they voted the way that they did in the original hearing. We do still, however, need a quorum of commissioners to conduct business at all, which is why the whole panel sits on revised findings, but the reason for only the commissioners on the prevailing side voting is because the findings are reflecting their internal thinking at the time of the vote.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Warren. The next item, it doesn't look like there is anything to report in the North Central Coast DDR, so that brings us to 16A.
Yes, that's correct. There's nothing in item number 16. We do have a item number 16A is an informational update about the Muscle Rock site in City of Daly City, and we have a PowerPoint for this. And Julian Honey, who's our analyst for this area, is going to give our presentation, and he should be on the Zoom.
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead, Julian.
Excellent. So thank you, Chair Harmon and commissioners. As Dan said today, with item 16A, we're going to be providing an informational overview of the pressing issues facing the Muscle Rock landfill site, both to prepare you for an upcoming condition compliance item that we intend to bring for action later this year, but also to raise public awareness in hopes of finding proactive solutions in the long term. The photo on slide one gives you a view of the site looking north towards San Francisco, with the Western Marin Headlands in the far distance on the left. While this image captures the beauty of this section of the California coast, you can't see what underlies it, which is literal tons of waste left without many easy solutions, as I'll get into in this presentation. Next slide, please. The Muscle Rock landfill site, which is owned and managed by the City of Daly City, is a since-capped and closed landfill that is located at the southern end of Daly City, directly north of Pacifica, in an area of high geologic instability running along the Pacific Ocean. The city limits are shown on slide 2 in blue, with the location of the Muscle Rock landfill site marked by the red star. Next slide, please. Slide 3 gives you another sense of the site, again looking to the north. In the bottom right image, the former landfill stretches out before you with a series of public access trails and utility roads crisscrossing the landscape that exists atop its soil cap. The image on the left depicts the revetment as constructed in May of 2025. Also pictured on the top right of the slide is the entrance via a pedestrian gate. Today, the area is used as a public park of sorts for hiking, fishing, and paragliding, and is fronted all along almost its entire seaward length by a large armoring structure that helps to contain the former landfill materials. While this area was previously a landfill and is now used as open space, it has a notable and important history, and archaeological finds have demonstrated that Mussel Rock was home to a series of Native American villages for thousands of years, and additional work will be needed to address these cultural resources. Next slide, please. Mussel Rock was operated as a municipal landfill serving the cities of Daly City and Pacifica for 20 years, from 1957 until 1978, when it was then closed by the Regional Water Quality Control Board due to concerns about its water quality impacts. Although the overall site measures about 150 acres, the waste itself occupies roughly 29 acres in two main regions. The first is an approximately 4-acre area called the upper disposal area, which is generally shown in red in the images on slide 4, and the approximately 25-acre lower disposal area that is generally shown in blue. Taken together, these regions represent where about 1.4 million cubic yards of trash were previously placed. Also illustrated on the slide is the approximate boundary of the revetment, outlined in green. On the left of the slide are two oblique aerial images of the site, the top left depicting the site while it was still being operated as a landfill in 1972, and the bottom left showing its capped and managed configuration as of 2024. These pictures illustrate a number of things, including that the site was actively being managed in the 1970s with a large engineered slope in the center of the image and a revetment extending from that slope down coast to the right. Since that time, the photos show an expanded revetment, progressive bluff erosion, particularly in the area fronting the upper disposal area, landsliding in the upcoast part of the site, and the almost complete loss of sandy beach over time. Next slide, please. This site is located at the intersection of numerous serious hazards that significantly undermine its stability, including not only systemic erosion, landslides, and storm and wave action, but also the potential for considerable seismic activity. This is the site of one of the largest active landslides in coastal California and is located at roughly the point where the San Andreas Fault bisects the San Francisco Peninsula and drops into the Pacific Ocean. Although these types of hazards were known when the landfill was first established in the late 1950s, they were clearly discounted at the time, and since then there has been substantial need for regular, ongoing, and costly maintenance, monitoring, and remediation. While this kind of hazardous site would be problematic for any number of developments and uses, it is particularly problematic when the site in question includes over 1 million cubic yards of solid waste immediately adjacent to the Pacific. The image on slide 5 zooms in on the bluffs fronting the upper disposal area and the erosion and landslides that are affecting it. This episode, pictured from 2018, dropped trash and drainage infrastructure to the beach below, some of which can be seen dangling over the bluff in places, all harming water quality. Just this year, erosion affecting the same area has led to similar outcomes. And accordingly, last month, the Commission approved an emergency coastal permit to extend the riprap revetment fronting the site further up coast to more thoroughly front the landslide area at the north of the site. This revetment work is still ongoing. Next slide, please. The revetment, which can be seen here looking north, fronts the site and serves to hold in and contain the landfill materials. The revetment originated in the 1960s and 70s when it was built as part of the regional board's requirements back when the landfill was in operation to curtail garbage that was being washed into the ocean due to instability at the time. Since then, the revetment has been augmented multiple times and today extends along over a half mile of coast, reaching some 35 feet in height, with gabion basket retaining walls shown here on the inland side of the access road extending even higher than that in some places, and with associated integrated water quality and stormwater drainage infrastructure, all of which can be seen in this image. This revetment continues to be the city's chosen method to prevent pollutants from entering the ocean. As might be expected, given that the armoring has been present at this location for over 50 years, limited sandy beach area remains seaward of the revetment, and it is essentially located directly at the ocean's edge, where continuous tidal and wave action, severe winter storm events, site instability, and episodic landsliding all combine to destabilize both the revetment and the overall site. Next slide, please. The Commission's involvement at the site began in 1978 when it issued a CDP that authorized capping the landfill, installing public trails atop the cap, implementing other closure-related activities, and constructing a new solid waste transfer station at the southern end of the site, all intended to meet the Water Board's closure requirements. Ultimately, the city found itself out of compliance with that CDP when the required public access improvements were not initiated, and the city undertook further development at the site to comply with the Water Board's requirements, including revetment modifications, all without a CDP. It wasn't until some 25 years later, in 2002, that the city pursued a CDP when problems with the revetment again required remediation. At the time, the commission authorized the repair and expansion of a 50-foot section of the revetment and a roughly 150-foot section of Gabion retaining wall, but for the next 10 years, work continued to be performed without CDPs. Ultimately, the city approached the commission about further armoring changes, which prompted staff to then take a closer look at the permitting and non-compliance over the years. The city proposed and the commission authorized past unpermitted revetment work, as well as more augmentation and site work in 2012, where that permit reauthorized the armoring structure as it existed at the time. And that 2012 permit is thus the base permit that applies to this site. In 2012, it was made apparent that the site was becoming more problematic, which raised concerns that either an episodic event or gradual destabilization was going to lead to significant trash and related materials finding their way to the beach and into the ocean. At the time, the commission expressed strong concern that there was no comprehensive plan to address the problem, including when the armoring had proven to need constant upkeep and was continuing to lead to significant coastal resource impacts and a direct and ongoing loss of beach. The commission also wanted further details and analyses related to the future of the landfill and armoring, and identified the need to develop a long-term solution to address the issues raised by the continued protection of the closed landfill. Accordingly, the commission required the city to consider options for planning for retreat of the landfill, including a detailed feasibility study and cost assessment for relocation of some or all of the landfill and the restoration of the site. Thus, that 2012 base CDP limited the armoring authorization to 3 years and required that a planned retreat management plan, also referred to as a PRMP, be submitted for review and approval by the executive director by 2014, and such a plan be implemented in 2015. Next slide, please. The PRMP was required to fully evaluate potential relocation of the landfill, removal of the armoring, remediation and restoration of the site, and identify potential constraints, phasing options, timelines, project costs, and funding sources. Although the city has submitted multiple iterations of PRMPs over the years, these plans have not been sufficient to meet the base CDP's requirements. In the interim, the armoring authorization under the Commission's 2012 CDP expired in 2015, and thus the armoring at the site has been out of compliance for 10 years. At the same time, the dangers have persisted, where the image on the left of the slide shows a revetment failure from late 2024, and the image on the right of the slide depicts what the buried waste looks like once it's exposed as it sloughs towards the coast. It's clear that the site is extremely problematic and will likely only become more so as coastal hazard risks intensify, including considering rising sea levels. It's unclear whether continued landslide remediation and revetment augmentation at the site will be sufficient in the long run to contain the landfill in place, nor whether that is the best public policy and coastal resource option for this site. As previously mentioned, there are numerous ecologic, geologic, and cultural sensitivity issues which have not been effectively addressed. Presently, the landfill continues to sporadically shed trash onto the beach and into the ocean, and the Water Board requires active monitoring for leachate, which continues to be a significant concern. Staff continues to believe that this former landfill poses a severe threat to beach and marine resources, especially due to its hazardous location, and we are seriously concerned about the risk of a catastrophic failure driven by any of the hazards that exist here. Next slide, please. For whatever reason, the issues surrounding Mussel Rock have been under the collective environmental radar, and in staff's view, it's extremely important to raise the profile of these issues in the public arena, which is at least partially the reason for this informational item today. It's also important to raise awareness because a potential remediation project of this scope would be quite expensive and require partnerships and engagement at all levels. It's our hope that increased awareness can also help to act as a spark towards action on appropriate long-term solutions. Regarding the next steps, the city is in the process of preparing a revision to the PRMP, which staff will review, and we intend to bring the plan back before the commission to understand the commission's perspectives on the site moving forward, hopefully sometime later this year. Once a PRMP, is approved, regardless of its recommendations, it will likely take some time to be implemented. And ultimately, as required by the base permit, implementation would need to be approved by the commission through a coastal permit amendment. Importantly, today's presentation is just for informational purposes, and questions about how this problem should be solved are intended to be asked and answered in relation to the PRMP review, which we hope to bring to the commission later this year. While we're happy to answer informational questions, we would ask that the commission and any interested parties limit their discussion about the possible future outcomes here and instead defer that analysis and discussion to the PRMP review when more information will be available. With that, Daly City Director of Public Works Richard Chu is here and intends to speak to you next. That concludes staff presentation, but we are available for questions. Thank you.
Yes, we have Richard Chu, and he's in on Zoom. You should be able to unmute and begin.
Yes, hi, good afternoon. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, great. Yes, thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the Commission. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. As mentioned, my name is Richard Chu, and I'm the Director of Public Works here for the City of Daly City. First of all, I want to thank your staff for working with us over the years on this challenging site. In addition to working with the California Coastal Commission, we are also working with Regional Water Quality Control Board, County of San Mateo Environmental Health, Golden Gate National Recreation, as well as other regulatory agencies as required. The city became responsible for the issues at the Muscle Rock landfill after the landfill was closed in 1978. As indicated in the staff presentation, the site is a challenging site, and we continue to work with all regulatory agencies to stabilize the site so that we can perform the needed studies and the analysis to develop a long-term plan that will be acceptable to all regulatory agencies while continuing to seek funding to support this challenging site. The city has been spending significant resources on the site over the years. However, additional resources will be needed. Just last year, the city spent approximately $1.5 million on the upper disposal area. And this year, we will be spending approximately $6.5 million on the seawall repair as well as revetment installation. Regarding grants, we continue to look for opportunities and apply as appropriate. We did receive a small CalRecycle grant a couple of years ago, and we have also partnered with One Shoreline recently to submit another grant application. I will conclude by saying that we will continue to work with your staff on addressing their comments on the plan retreat management plan. And I do want to thank you for the time, and I am here to help answer any questions that the commission may have for me. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chu. Are there any public comments on this informational item?
We have no speakers for this item.
Great. Okay, thank you. Bringing it back to the commission and just highlighting the request that staff made to hold our questions around solutions to the appropriate time. Is there anyone who wishes to make a comment or ask a question? Commissioner Wilson?
Yeah, just kind of like when we were talking about wastewater treatment systems back when we were talking about the city of San Francisco, just it was not unusual to place solid waste at the edge of our oceans and bays, it just was not unusual, and I would imagine this may have even started out as an unofficial place to dump debris and then it became official at some point, which has happened in a lot of places, including Humboldt Bay, San Francisco Bay, LA, a lot of landfills, and a lot of even places were constructed on. So I just, sometimes we look at this through a lens of like, how could this possibly happen? Well, it just happened in a time long ago, and now we're dealing with it. And so so I don't want to put on the city staff in this day and age as if they're responsible for the past transgressions of where we as humans put our waste, and hopefully we'll be working with them as moving forward. And as noted, it is right on the San Andreas Fault, which is something to consider. But again, it's good that we're talking about it, and I'm glad this has been brought up. But also, I just want to make sure we're not condemning anybody at this time. Thanks.
Thank you. Well said. Commissioner Turnbull-Sanders.
Just one additional question. Staff may have covered this, but just looking at some of the photos online, there are homes that are located nearby. What's the status of those homes in terms of the stability there? Are they pre-coastal? Are there any issues there with those as well?
There's definitely, as Mr. Honey indicated in the presentation, there's still a significant active landslide there. A number of homes were removed, and I would ask Mr. Honey the exact date, probably 10, 15 years ago, because they were affected by said landslide. It's not clear at this point that any more of those homes are going to become in danger, but again, I think it's the second largest active landslide in coastal California. And so there is that potential, and they're way up on the hill, as you probably saw in the photographs. So yeah, that there's that danger too. Obviously we're focused on the challenges associated with the former landfill, but that's going to become, you know, part of the issue at some point in the future as well. So yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Nada.
As a child growing up in San Mateo County in the 50s and 60s, I probably am responsible for some of the waste that's now buried there. So I would certainly hope that I could be part of the solution going forward. I was just checking, is this in Senate District 11? I believe Daly City is in Senate District 11. We have some folks that we could work with to try and identify resources.
Okay. Thank you very much, and thank you to our staff for bringing this forward and continuing the conversation. Thank you. Now, brings us to our final item for today, which is the Deputy Director's report for the Central Coast District.
Yes, that's item number 17, and in the Central Coast DD's report this month, we're reporting 4 waivers, 1 coastal permit amendment, and 1 permit extension. I'd note that we did receive an objection to the Moss Landing Harbor District's proposed amendment to add a small area to their regular dredge operations. The objector is not objecting to adding the area per se, so much as objecting to any dredging at the harbor, contending that the harbor sediments are simply too contaminated to remove, including related to fallout from the Vistra battery storage fire and related remediation work that was from earlier this year. So staff has 2 things to note in response. First is that the underlying coastal permit allows for dredging over a 65-acre area, and that authorization exists independent of the proposed amendment. So this proposed amendment would add approximately 0.2 acres of allowable dredge area. In other words, the amendment, it's only the 0.2-acre area that's before you today. But second, and probably more importantly to the comment, the coastal permit already accounts for the potential that there might be contaminated sediments in any particular proposed dredge area, and it requires extensive pre-dredge sampling and testing to determine the nature of the sediments. If they're found to be contaminated, meaning that the sediments do not meet Clean Water Act standards, then the material cannot be dredged unless and until the permittee prepares a plan for how they intend to conduct the dredging safely, and that plan requires the executive director to review and approve it. So put another way, if the materials aren't adequately clean and the removal could lead to aquatic or other sorts of problems, the permit requires an executive director approved plan to address those problems. And that plan must be able to be implemented in a way that doesn't lead to safety problems of the sort alleged by the operator, or excuse me, by the objector. This requirement was added with the concept of legacy contamination in mind, particularly as it relates to agriculturally related contamination that's been known to be present in this harbor more broadly. Thus, we think the permit already accounts for the issues that are addressed, and we continue to recommend approval of the amendment. Past that, we're not aware of any objections or controversy regarding the other items, and so the question is whether three or more commissioners object, and if not, then the items in the DD's report will be approved.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes to report? Okay. How about any speakers on any of these items?
There are no speakers for this item.
Great. Thank you. Do three or more commissioners object to any item in the deputy director's report? Please, Commissioner Lopez.
Just on the Moss Landing issue, obviously being very intimately informed of what is happening there at this time, I'm wondering the testing that's normally done, as was explained, does it include heavy metals? Again, we have not yet seen anything above baseline levels, but just curious if that would be included in the testing that is done as part of the process.
I would imagine, but I'd also ask, Braylon Allman, who's our analyst on this, Braylon, are you on the Zoom? He'd have a better answer for you than I might.
Braylon is not on Zoom.
Okay. As a general rule, they're required to run through a whole series of testing. It's basically EPA set up, EPA, Army Corps, Regional Board set of testing. I would imagine it would address heavy metals, but I'm not positive right now.
So happy to take that answer offline if staff could follow up.
Yeah, I definitely can follow up.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. Do three or more commissioners object to any item in the deputy director's report? Okay, seeing no objection, the commission concurs. And now I think we'll be heading into closed session. So let's just do 5 minutes and then be back here so everyone can be part of it. Thank you.